providing you with informative and entertaining programs. This is the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. The Army is extending now the tours of thousands of National Guard and reservists currently serving in Iraq. The announcement comes amid a report in the Washington Post. Several intelligence agencies warned the Bush administration about post-war problems in Iraq before the invasion. More from correspondent Laura Iyama.
The Washington Post reports intelligence agencies accurately predicted that U.S. forces would encounter more problems after the Iraq War than in overthrowing Saddam Hussein. In the view of America's agencies, if Iraqis saw the U.S. and the West trying to keep them dependent, then Iraqis probably would turn to obstruction, resistance, and armed opposition. As for terrorism, last summer the CIA warned chaos after the war would turn Iraq into a laboratory for terrorists. Laura Iyama, Washington.
National Guard troops and reservists will reportedly be in Iraq up to a year, 6 months longer than they first thought. Meanwhile, the Senate Armed Services Committee wants to know if America's military is currently stretched too thin. Joint Chiefs Chairman General Richard Myers is among those scheduled to testify before the panel. Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz has already been testifying on the issue. Senators are also expected to pose some tough questions about President Bush's request for $87 billion for Iraq and Afghanistan. Many lawmakers say he will get his money, but not before those questions are answered. Residents in Indiana are anxiously awaiting word on the condition of Governor Frank O'Bannon. Mr. O'Bannon's in a coma still following surgery at a Chicago hospital yesterday after he suffered a stroke. Reporter Jerry Snook with more.
A spokesman at Northwestern Memorial Hospital says Indiana Governor Frank O'Bannon remains in a drug-induced coma and is on a ventilator. Doctors say the next few days will be critical to the governor's recovery. O'Bannon was found unconscious and unresponsive in a Chicago hotel room yesterday morning before he was sent to deliver welcoming remarks to the U.S. Midwest Japan Conference at the Palmer House Hilton Hotel. Meanwhile, Lieutenant Governor Joe Kernan has assumed temporary acting governor duties while top state officials watch and wait for word of O'Bannon's condition. I'm Jerry Snook.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... but on the inside, I'm all... just because I look like... doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
Israeli police say at least three people are dead after an explosion outside an Israeli army base. Ambulance workers on scene say dozens more could still be dead or wounded. The blast, which police are already describing as a terrorist attack, happened at the entrance to the base near Tel Aviv. There's a battle brewing at the United Nations today over lifting economic sanctions on Libya. The Security Council is supposed to vote on the matter after Libya settled with the victims of the 1988 Pan Am Lockerbie bombing. French officials, though, want the vote delayed while a compensation package is worked out over the bombing of a French airliner.
Oh, 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 ice cold milk and an Oreo cookie. They forever go together, what a classic combination. When a dark, delicious cookie meets an icy cold sensation, like the one and only creamy, crunchy chocolate Oreo, keeps your milk from getting lonely. Oh, 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 the one and only.
Only Oreo, in classic or chocolate cream.
Oh, 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 the one and...
Dozens of protesters showed up today to greet Attorney General John Ashcroft as his whistle-stop campaign to drum up support for the controversial Patriot Act brought him to Boston. More from correspondent Judy Yule.
In the run-up to the second anniversary of the terror attacks, Ashcroft praised the Patriot Act as an important tool to fight terrorism and to protect Americans. A relatively small crowd turned out to hear Ashcroft at Faneuil Hall, but he did bring up the protesters. Scores have demonstrated, chanted, and waved signs denouncing the Patriots Act. They say it erodes their constitutional rights to privacy and freedom of speech. I'm Judy Ewell at Faneuil Hall.
And reports of an $85 million settlement to people who were allegedly abused by priests in the Boston Archdiocese are being denied today. Both the Boston Herald and ABC News have reported that settlement. The Reverend Chris Coyne, who's a spokesman for the Archdiocese, says no settlement has been reached yet with any of the more than 500 plaintiffs. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Think of your favorite child. Now think of your favorite child again in your car. What can you do to ensure that child will live to become a favorite adult? When I come back, I'll tell you.
Okay, so you want one good reason to get LoJack installed in your car. Well, unfortunately, I can't give you that. But I can give you three. LoJack has a 90% recovery success rate. LoJack has helped recover over 100,000 vehicles worldwide. And LoJack is the only stolen vehicle recovery system used by the police. So if you still want just one good reason to get LoJack, that last one should do quite nicely. To find a dealer near you, visit LoJack.com. And keep it close.
How do you protect your most precious cargo? Safety seats, which reduce infant death risk by 69% and toddler by 47%. Infant seats from birth to 1 year should be installed rear-facing in the back seat. These often convert to front-facing for toddlers under 4 years and 40 pounds. Booster seats are suitable for children 4 to 8, but not until a child is over 80 pounds and 8 years old are regular seat belts proper restraints. Whatever their age, when you think of your favorite children, picture them buckled up, then do it. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome live coast to coast on the IE America Radio Network. This is Tom Hartman, broadcasting also from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite, Stream 145, the satellite radio system, and on the Internet on three different Internet radio stations, radiopower.org, Live365.com and IEAmericaRadio.com, with archives of the program that you can listen to any time of the day or night on the Internet, if you would like, at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Our question for this first hour, and we're going to get into this in just a minute, will conservatism, and I use that word very, very carefully, I'm using it as if you say, like, Protestantism or Mormonism or Method, because it is a religion. And I'll explain what I mean here. Will conservatism do as much damage to democracy and to America as communism did to the Soviet Union? Will the experiment, this radical social, economic, and international experiment called conservatism... These are not your father's or grandfather's conservatives. We have, on this program many times, listened to Dwight Eisenhower and other classic conservatives defining their worldview, and it is not the worldview of Ronald Reagan, George Bush Sr., George Bush Jr., Bill Kristol, the whole bunch out there. It is not their worldview. It is not the worldview of the right-wing talk show hosts. These guys have latched onto something very new and something very old. This is something that goes back to Imperial Rome. This is something that in the United States goes back to Alexander Hamilton, who argued his opening speech at the U.S. Constitutional Convention in 1786 or 1787, when they sat down to write the Constitution of the United States, argued that monarchy was the most stable form of government, and we should try to emulate it as much as possible, that aristocracy was absolutely necessary. He was hear-heared in much of that by John Adams. But this is in some ways an ancient thing, but there's a new twist on it that Ayn Rand brought to the table. And this has truly become a religion. And I want to get into the details of that. But first, just a few little news things here that this from the New York Times today. And the New York Report page, this was reported as a local story. But apparently last night in Chappaqua in New York, Hillary Rodham Clinton and Bill Clinton threw a party for 150 of their major campaign, of Hillary's major campaign donors. And this was billed as kind of a thank you for the money. And of course, you know, you keep in touch with your campaign donors and maybe hustling a little money for the future elections, no doubt. And I quote from the New York Times, President Clinton, one of the people at the meeting heard President Clinton say that the National Democratic Party had two stars. Stars as in movie stars, stars. His wife, the junior Democratic senator from New York, and a retired general, Wesley K. Clark. They go on to say they heard Mrs. Clinton say how important their support would be for my next campaign, whatever that may be. And later, Mr. Clinton, in discussing the presidential field, said, quote, we might have another candidate or two jumping into the race, end quote. Boy, I can tell you, the speculation is going to be nuts today. What would happen if Hillary and Wesley Clark announced a ticket? Well, first of all, they'd probably have to arm wrestle for who got to be president, because I think both of these folks are extremely ambitious. But a Hillary for president, Wesley Clark for vice president, which I think is the most likely scenario, candidacy, would in all probability blow Bill Clinton, blow George W. Bush right flat out of the water. And I think this is the possibility of this is one of the reasons why the cons have been foaming at the mouth for the last year about Hillary, and they can't say anything about anything without invoking the ghost of Bill Clinton, partly because Bill Clinton, you know, here the new talking points on the right, the big new talking point for the cons is that, well, George Bush inherited an economy that was already beginning to sink. He inherited bin Laden was already planning 9/11. Now, what do you, you know... Bill Clinton didn't do anything about bin Laden. Well, first of all, Clinton had done quite a bit about bin Laden. He even tried to kill him once, chasing him around, bombing him. It's funny. On the one hand, they say, you know, how dare Bill Clinton do this bombing in Somalia? On the other hand, this aspirin factory. And then on the other hand, he never did anything against bin Laden. Well, he was looking for bin Laden at that point. When the handover happened, the Clinton administration's national security advisor told the incoming Bush administration's national security advisor that their highest priority, their number one issue, was Osama bin Laden because he was planning something terrible and it had to be stopped. And the Bush administration assigned nobody to this, no money to it. But anyhow, the main talking point of the cons these days, I mean, that's a big one that they're going to pump as hard as they can, but the main talking point seems to be, well, Bill Clinton or George Bush inherited an economy that was in decline, as if to say that he's had his hands tied behind his back for 3 years, he's incapable, incompetent, and we should just cut him some slack. I mean, isn't that really the message behind the message? When you hear conservatives say, George Bush inherited an economy in collapse, and the economy was in decline. Doesn't it occur to you that what they're really saying is, George Bush is incompetent, he can't do anything. In 3 years, he hasn't been able to fix something that, I mean, consider. When Bill Clinton took office in 1992, we were in a major recession caused by the policies of George Bush Sr. Remember? It's the economy, stupid, was the poster on the wall in the Clinton headquarters. George Sr. had that moment on TV where he was asked if he could, you know, how he was going through a supermarket and he saw a scanner. And he said, oh, my goodness, look at that. Isn't it amazing? The wonders of technology. And the clerk said, well, Mr. Bush, we've had these for about 10 years. Of course, this is a multimillionaire who was the son of a multimillionaire who is the grandson of a multimillionaire. And, of course, his son, George W., is the great-great-grandson of a multimillionaire. They'd never been shopping. He had no idea what it's like to live in the real world. And so Bill Clinton inherited a mess that was as bad and in many ways worse than the mess that George W. Bush inherited, if you want to call it a mess. I would say, you know, the economy was actually still doing well in early 2001 when George Bush came into office. But anyhow, it's you know, here's your conservative alert for the day. This is it, folks. Our conservative alert for the day. When you hear the conservatives say, oh, Bush inherited a terrible economy, that's the problem. What they're really saying is Bush couldn't turn it around in a couple of years the way Bill Clinton did when he inherited a terrible economy. They're really saying Bush is a dummy. Just listen carefully to the message behind the message. Our conservative alert for the day. We're going to get to our corporate alert in a little bit, our piggies alert a little bit later. But will conservatives do as much damage to democracy in America as communism did to the Soviet Union? By the way, if you'd like to drop into our chat room, go to TomHartmanShow.com or LiberalTalkRadio.com and click on the chat link. There's also a message board. That's where you can post permanent messages and have discussions with people. There's a couple thousand folks in there and I think well over 20,000 messages now. But if you want to participate in real-time, real-live chat that I actually read during the breaks and sit in on some of the most erudite, insightful, intelligent, and thoughtful conversations going, this is one of the marvels. Here we have live radio interacting, you know, on radio stations all across the country, interacting with live Internet in this chat room, and it's just so cool technology. And here I am broadcasting live from the People's Republic of Vermont out of a network in Detroit, beaming up to a satellite and coming down to radio stations all over the country. It's amazing. Anyhow, if you want to drop in, follow the chat links to the chat button. Today is day 212 in the search for weapons of mass destruction, day 728 in the search for that man's name shall not pass the lips of George W. Bush. Have you noticed? How long has it been since he said Osama bin Laden out loud? How long has it been? I frankly don't know. It seems to me that it's been a long, long time. And interestingly, Newsweek was able to get a reporter into where Osama bin Laden is or near to it. You know, he had this conference for terrorists a few weeks ago. And, but, you know, somehow George Bush can't figure that out. But back to this, will the experiment, this radical social, economic, and geopolitical international experiment of conservatism, do as much damage to democracy and to America, to the United States of America, as the radical experiment of communism did to the Soviet Union? Now, I make there's a lot of parallels here, and they're very significant, and it's really important to understand this. The today's neocons, the conservative, you know, the thinkers of the conservative movement, many of them came out of being philosophical followers of Leon Trotsky back in the 60s. I mean, Trotsky was long dead in the 60s, but in the 60s there was a kind of revival of Trotskyism. Trotsky felt that the Stalinists had betrayed the Bolshevik Revolution, true communism. And that if they only tried it, you know, a little better. And similarly, the neocons now, and now I think we should just say conservatives. It's because what's going to happen as these guys get increasingly discredited, the neocons, is that the conservatives are going to say, oh, well, those were just, you know, these bozos, they screwed us up in Iraq, and you know, they will be in disrepute. But really, this is the whole conservative thing as well. Conservatism and communism are both utopian religions. They are both utopian worldviews. They are both grounded in a world that doesn't exist, and only could in a perfect world, and they both promise that someday a perfect world will come. I'll explain in some detail in just a moment. Stick around. This is Tom Hartman. Talk radio for the rest of us. We'll be right back.
Hi, Tom Baudet for Motel6.com. Next time you're goofing around on the internet, you know, in other words, the next time you're at work, click on over to Motel6.com for Click 6 Web Bargains. Those are special discounts at hundreds of locations that you can only get when you book online. Just look for the Click 6 icon at Motel6.com and then get back to work. I'm Tom Baudet, and we'll leave the light and the modem on for you. And a core hotel.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
The following conversation is real. It took place on April 20th, 2003, between an OnStar advisor and a subscriber.
OnStar Center, this is Ms. Johnson. How may I help you?
Well, I locked my doors and left my little clicker inside.
Oh.
Yes, I guess I need my doors unlocked.
I can help you with that.
You may not be able to because it's actually in my garage, but we can try it. What do you need?
Your account number.
Account number is 000.
When you have OnStar, if you lock your keys inside your car, an OnStar advisor can send a signal to unlock your doors, even if it's in a remote location.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Prepare to be astonished!
Okay, so just what is going on here, people?
Did you know that you can get the best of Progressive Talk Radio on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145?
Oh, really?
Well, that's remarkable.
Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145 is loaded with political talk radio from the other side.
Hurrah!
Kick it off your morning with Doug Steffens' Good Day from 5 a.m. till noon Eastern Time, followed by the Tom Hartman Show from noon to 3 p.m. Then get different perspectives from different show hosts on Radio Free Speech Zone from 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera then takes the reins from 5 p.m. till 7, followed by All American Talk Radio from 7 p.m. till 9. Then get ready to fire up your night with the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time, all live Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145, powered by the only progressive talk radio network, i.e. America Radio Network.
So what do you want, a medal?
Well, isn't that special?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Get in touch with God. Turn your radio on. Turn your radio on. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on. Yes, turn your radio on. I hear from my producer that I didn't properly welcome KGOE yesterday. to our collection of stations, our family of stations that carry this program, the Tom Hartman program here. And so that's our bumper music for a new station. Welcome to those folks in Eureka, California. The classical liberal thought goes back to Hobbes, Locke, Hume, Madison, James Madison, Smith, Adam Smith, and suggests broadly that there should be some limitations on corporate behavior or on business behavior, and there should be limitations on government. It's a middle ground. It's a balance. The infrastructure should, you know, the commons. There's this kind of, I'll get to that in a second. I'm getting ahead of myself here. Brainshrub in the chat room said, how come, you know, you're talking about Trotsky and the neocons, and I thought Trotsky was like, you know, communism, and the neocons are anti-communist. Some of these folks, this is just, you know, reading the histories of the movement, as it were. Some of them changed their mind. These were people who are committed to revolution. It's like, you know, change the world. Let's change the world now. Let's do it. Let's do it quickly. And they went from one to another. The utopian religion of communism suggested that everything could be just great if only. See, there's always this if only. If only the means of production was owned by all the people rather than by a small handful of nasty capitalists. That was the communist idea. And the libertarian idea, or the objectivist idea, or the conservative idea, and they've increasingly morphed into one, is that everything will be just fine if there's an absolutely free market, if there's no government interference in business whatsoever. And whenever you say to them, well, you know, what about, you know, for example, this petition right now by the Indian people in India to Bayer company, to Bayer in German company that is killing them. They are selling pesticides in India and using them that are illegal in the Western world. And people are getting sick and people are dying, and they're petitioning Bayer, please stop poisoning us. And Bayer says, but you know, these things are cheap. This is profitable. And, you know, and on it goes. I have a few examples to share with you today here as we move on. And you point that out to the conservatives, and they go, well, see, we don't have a truly free market yet. In a truly free market, there would be nobody regulating what the corporation could do, and competition would cause a corporation to come along and say, well, hey, we can make a pesticide that won't kill people, and everybody would flock to it. And here's where it falls apart. For that world to exist, everybody would have to know everything about everything. In other words, everybody would have to be fully informed. The reason why we have regulatory agencies is because everybody can't be fully informed. Now, I'm going to bring this back around to the war as well in Iraq, because this is all of the same fabric. You have to understand, this war in Iraq was created out of a religious doctrine, out of a belief system that has not been demonstrated in the real world. This is an article of faith, just like communism was. So, well, it's not a religion. Yes, it has its own. They both have their own catechisms, their own rituals, their own secret societies, their own power structure, their own notion of redemption and salvation within the context of social stuff. I think that you could broadly call them both religions in a way. And both are somewhat reactive. Karl Marx was reacting to the Victorian era conservatism, saying, look at all this poverty in the midst of all this wealth. This isn't right. And the conservatives reacting to government regulation and control. Ayn Rand. Well, let me tell you about Ayn Rand right after this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, Uncommon Sense in the Radical Middle. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
Embarrassing disclosures for Ford Motor Company and the United Auto Workers in the form of a decision handed down by the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals yesterday. The case involves Stephen Himmel, who from 1977 to 1997 was Ford's man in charge of labor relations at its Sharonville, Ohio transmission plant. He was fired for objecting to an unwritten deal worked out between the UAW and Ford, whereby individual UAW officials have direct influence over the hiring of up to 10% of Ford's union workforce. Himmel sued over his firing, and a district court ruled for Ford, but the Sixth Circuit reversed the decision, citing existence of evidence that the unwritten deal may actually exist. Ford has never disputed it.
The American Federation of Labor and the Congress of Industrial Organizations merged in 1955 to form America's largest labor federation, the AFL-CIO, but new differences within the union umbrella group are threatening to split the organization apart. Leaders of the Service Employees International Union, along with the Carpenters, Laborers, Teamsters and the country's largest textile workers union, Unite, recently formed a group they call New Unity Partnership that hopes to turn around organized labor's long, steady decline in U.S. membership. The partnership's leaders say their new organization isn't ready to split from the AFL-CIO, but could in the future.
California has become the 17th state in the nation to outlaw companies from profiting off the deaths of employees. Hundreds of companies take out what are known as dead peasant insurance on their workers. These life insurance policies name the company as beneficiary. California's dead peasant insurance prohibition, signed into law over the weekend, allows current corporate life insurance policies on workers to remain in effect for now, but the practice will be banned completely come 2010.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune into Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're gonna kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boy, come on!
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Top Republican legislators, says the Rocky Mountain News in an article titled GOP Takes on Leftist Education, top Republican legislators are working on a plan that would require Colorado colleges and universities to seek more conservatives in faculty hiring. See, this is what happens when a religion feels that it's not getting its due. It tries to force itself on society. I would suggest to you that the reason that conservatives are underrepresented in academia, in the university world, is because their worldview doesn't make any sense. Rather than trying to develop new ideas, they're trotting out the old ideas of aristocracy and feudalism that Mussolini thought was a new idea in the 1930s when he reinvented feudalism and called it fascism. They're trotting out these old ideas, trying to wrap them in new packages. Less government! Well, there's always a dynamic balance between government and feudal powers. There always is. Look at all the way back to Sumeria, 7,000 years of civilization. Now, in universities, you're going to find more people who are familiar with the history of civilization than people who are not. And they will know that in 7,000 years of civilization, there is always this dynamic equilibrium. There's always this balance. There is always a tension. That when feudalism is essentially rule by the rich, and when rule by the rich becomes more and more powerful, rule by a central government, or you know, whether it's a kingdom, a theocracy, or a democracy, becomes weaker. And when a central government becomes stronger, rule by the rich becomes weaker. It's like a teeter-totter. They can't both be at the top, and they can't both be at the bottom, because then there would be a vacuum to fill if they were both at the bottom, and there's not room for both of them to be at the top, unless the rich take over the government, which was Mussolini's idea. Mussolini suggested that fascism is the merging of corporate and state interests. So in universities, you've got people who have figured this out. This is not rocket science, folks. You hear all the whining on the right. Boil it down. It boils down to more power for corporations, more power and wealth for the extremely wealthy and powerful. It boils down to a form of an ancient form of governance called aristocracy and feudalism. Nonetheless, top Republican legislators are working on a plan that would require Colorado colleges and universities to seek more conservatives in faculty hiring. Next year, the GOP leadership hopes to implement the Academic Bill of Rights. They're going to pass a law requiring universities to hire more conservatives, which sets out to, quote, secure the intellectual independence of faculty and students and to protect the principle of intellectual diversity. Yes, the conservatives are going to force diversity in the universities. This is sort of like the demanding that they, if they're going to teach evolution, they must also teach creationism in the third grade. Governor Bill Owens of Colorado and David Horowitz, the controversial and outspoken L.A. conservative, got together on this thing. Horowitz wrote, universities should not be indoctrination centers for the political left. No, they shouldn't be. They should just tell the truth. And if the way the truth falls is that the cons are following a fabled mythical religion that only works in small community, fewer than 150 people, yes, you can have a free market and you can have communism. The pure conservatism and pure communism will both work in a community of fewer than 150 people. But once you get over 150 people, then it all falls apart. And Dr. Robin Dunbar at Oxford University, you know, just worked all this out, about 10 years ago. And I cite his research in my book on equal protection. And he found that 150 people is the optimal size, is the maximum size. The most number of people that you can keep track of in your life at any one time is 150 people. And when you get larger than 150 people, it's possible then for people to act anonymously. And once they have the shield of anonymity, then some people will begin to behave in sociopathic ways. They will begin to try and steal what they can, grab what they can, take advantage of other people, harm other people for their own gain. And once that happens, both communism and conservatism fall apart. And you end up, in both cases, with the Soviet-style communism, you end up with rule by the bureaucracy. And in modern-day conservatism, you end up with the situation where, for example, Iraq has become a cash recycling machine for Halliburton, the Carlyle Group, and Bechtel Corporation, all these donors, and then they recycle that money back to the Republicans, who get Republicans elected, who recycle the money back into the war machine, and on it goes, and this is a disaster for America. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number if you'd like to be on the program, if you have some thoughts on these topics. 1-800-825-5937. And Jim is driving through Memphis today. Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, sir. I'd like to throw something at you, and I'd like to hear your comments. I've been doing a lot of reading, and I've been hearing comments, and I've had a real concern about the voting and the voting machines and all of this. But something is starting to bother me a little more, and that concerns the overthrow of all these governorships in these states. And I heard a commentator the other day saying that that is the way to control the electoral votes from the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm concerned about if they do Davis out in California, that this is going to be a trend across the country. And
well, it already is. I mean, look at the redistricting in Texas.
That's
look
right.
at what and happened in Florida in 2000. I mean, this is and look at trying to throw Bill Clinton out of office by the impeachment process when 67% of the American people thought he was doing an excellent job as president. I mean, this is right wing takeover time writ large.
Well, I've kind of got some concerns about that. And is Greg Palast still coming on today?
Yeah, he's going to be on at 2 o'clock Eastern time.
Could you ask him about that and see what he has to say about that? And I'd appreciate it a lot.
I'll do that.
Thank you, sir.
And I encourage you, actually, you know, when he's on the program, assuming that he shows, every now and then you get a guest who doesn't show up, they're getting busy, the plane gets lost or whatever. But assuming that he actually shows up, if you want to call back when he's on, you can ask him yourself also, but I'll try to remember. And make a note of it. But yeah, the thing is, if the Republicans can seize control of the governorship of California, then they will have the advantage of the bully pulpit of the governor's office. The incumbency has tremendous advantages. There's great power associated with incumbencies. And this is just essentially an anti-democratic process. It so saddens me whenever I see Robert Novak smile, you know, his little trademark, you know, I've got my millions, you don't, smirk. The same Robert Novak who outed Joe Wilson's wife and maybe facing a hard prison time for causing the deaths of American CIA agents. Perhaps. I mean, time will tell. But in any case, whenever he leans back and he says, you just don't like the will of the people being exercised or exerted or expressed or whatever. You don't like democracy. You know, they say that anybody who thinks that there shouldn't be the recall in California doesn't like democracy. But pure democracy, as James Madison pointed out in Federalist Number 10, and I encourage you to read Federalist Number 10. The Federalist Papers were a series of debates, essentially, that were held. Although they were presented as debates, and in some ways they were, because there were some legitimate areas of disagreement and some substantial areas of disagreement. But mostly it was a PR campaign to sell the Constitution to the American electorate. And they were published in the newspapers. There's a whole series of them over about a year, as I recall, a year and a half period. Might have been less than that. And they were authored mostly by James Madison and Alexander Hamilton, although, as I recall, either John Jay or George Mason or both authored a few of them. But almost all of them were basically Hamilton and Madison. And there were a lot of things they agreed on, one being the need for a constitution. There were other things they disagreed on. And Federalist Number 10, which Madison authored, is the one in which he talks about the danger of factions and the danger of democracy. And this was, see, up until the time that this thing was written in 1787, up until the time that Madison wrote Federalist Number 10, the word democracy and the word republic in the dictionary were interchangeable. And in selling the Constitution, one of the problems that the founders identified was, it was really interesting, the debates that they were having. One of them was, should the elected representatives have the power to vote anything other than the will of the people? See, and they were modeling some of this after the Iroquois Confederacy. And in the Iroquois Confederacy, the men, the sachems, who were the ones who went to the tribal meetings didn't have the right to vote. Only the women could vote back in their communities. And so they would go, they'd have their meetings, they'd go back, the women would say, okay, do it this way. Then they'd go back and they'd say, okay, our group says do this in five of the six Iroquois Confederacy nations. And that model was presented, although they wanted the men to vote, not the women. But anyhow, but then they figured that'll take too long. So we have to, you know, give them the power to make decisions. But anyhow, Madison warned about pure democracy. He said pure democracy is mob rule, and of course he was mischaracterizing it, because democracy comes from the Greek, you know, Athens, Greece. And it certainly wasn't mob rule, but he was taking Aristotle's argument. He says this is, or Socrates' argument rather. And he said this is mob rule, and on the other hand, a republic, a rule completely of laws, can be so rigid that it can't change with the times, and we know the times are changing very rapidly. So what we want to do is combine the two and have a democratic republic. And that's why the political party that Thomas Jefferson founded, it was called the Democratic Republicans. We call them the Democrats today. It's the oldest political power or political party in existence, and one of the most noble, in my opinion. So anyhow, that most states... And historically, we had this thing to protect us against excessive democracy, as it were, which would be just this continuous disruptive process. So you have elections every 4 years. You have redistricting every 10 years. But partly in response to the excesses of the 1880s, the last time we had conservatives running this country, and it became a free-for-all for corporations and politicians to get in bed with each other and make money for each other. Partly in response to that, these laws were passed in California. Hiram Walker, I think, was the guy's name, or Hiram Johnson. Hiram Walker is a liquor, isn't it? And these laws were passed that allowed for actual direct democracy. We, the people, can do things, and you know, now it's coming back to bite us. Anyhow, we got Henry from San Diego on the line. He's called 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Henry, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air. What's up?
Thanks. Hi, Tom. Love your show. Love your stuff. I just wanted to read a quote to you from... Are you familiar with Alexander Tytler? Sir Alex Fraser Tytler, who lived in England between... He was a historian in England between 1742 and 1813.
I am not.
And he taught people about democracies, ancient democracies. And this adds perfect... It supports what you're talking about. He says that, you know, this is a quote about democracies. A democracy, he's talking about ancient democracies, so Roman democracies and the Athenian democracies. Democracy cannot stand. Oops. A democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It can only exist until the voters discover that they can vote themselves largesse from the public treasury. From that time on, the majority always votes for the candidates promising the most benefits from the public treasury, with the result that democracy always collapses over loose fiscal policy, always followed by a dictatorship.
Yeah, interesting.
And then he goes on to describe a cycle that democracies go through, and it's the average age of the world's civilizations has been 200 years. These nations have progressed through this sequence, from bondage to spiritual faith, from spiritual faith to great courage, from courage to liberty, from liberty to abundance, from abundance to selfishness, from selfishness to complacency, from complacency to apathy, from apathy to dependency, from dependency back into bondage.
Yeah. Well, John or Henry, I would suggest to you, number one, somebody posted that. Perhaps it was you on our message board.
No. It's a quote that's been out there for a while, yeah.
Yeah, I know. And somebody had posted that on our message board some months ago, and somebody else came in and said that, no, this is an apocryphal quote. This is something that some recent conservative made up. Particularly if he had written that in the 1700s or even the early 1800s, he couldn't be referring to any histories of democracy because there were none before then.
Well, he's talking about the Greek democracies and the Roman democracies.
The Greek democracies did very well. The Athenian democracy did very well, thank you very much. It was overthrown, it didn't decay from within. It was overthrown by Alexander the Great.
Mm-hmm.
And there was never a democracy in Rome.
Huh. Okay.
So it sounds to me like this is conservative propaganda, frankly, that this is, as one of the folks on our message board said, that this is apocryphal. That this is something that a modern person made up and put in the words and put it, because it's inconsistent with history, and it uses the buzzwords of those who do not like democracy, which by and large is the conservative movement in the United States right now. The suggestion that, and see, get the core suggestion of this thing, Henry. The core message that they're trying to communicate to you is that if government does anything for you, you're going to become lazy and complacent. And I would suggest to you that people are not motivated by what government does for them. People are intrinsically, internally motivated by and large. Most people, even if they won the lottery tomorrow, would still want to work. And in fact, those people who win the lottery and stop working are the ones who melt down psychologically and fall apart and end up suicides and alcoholics. And it's first of all, it's not true. And secondly, it doesn't make sense. But thanks for sharing it. I appreciate the call. Henry, thank you very much. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Boy, I remember the good old days.
Yeah, when was that?
2003, of course, when interest rates were at historic lows and we knew the economy was turning around. What an historic opportunity. We really jumped on it. How'd you do?
Well,
we needed to expand our manufacturing and warehousing, so we called General Steel Corporation and ordered buildings engineered for our area and to meet our needs. And with the stucco and rock products provided by the General, our buildings look great.
How will you look back at this historic opportunity? Small business owners know that now is the best time to build that new warehouse, manufacturing, or retail space. Whether you need a 60 by 200 foot building for under $50,000 or a 100 by 175 for under $98,000, call toll-free 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need to expand your business, you need the General. If your church or school needs to build quickly and save money, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
As your boss, I've noticed you've been dragging at work lately. So, take tomorrow off. Here, take the company tickets to the game. Box seats okay? And take my car.
In a guy's perfect world, you'd have it all. Well, now you can, because Domino's introduces Philly Cheesesteak Pizza. Guys like Philly Cheesesteak, guys like Domino's Pizza. Get your medium Philly Cheesesteak Pizza for $9.99, and you can get any second medium for just $5 more. Get the door. It's new Domino's Philly Cheesesteak Pizza. Limited time offer. Prices and terms may vary. You must ask for this offer when ordering.
Hi, I'm Hunter Ellis, and I want to tell you about my new series, Tactical to Practical.
Tactical to what?
To practical.
Shows have to rhyme now?
No. It's a show about how military technology goes civilian.
Some ex-Navy dolphins cleaned my pool once.
Really?
Yes, only 5 fish a day. Everything was going swimmingly until a Navy SEAL showed up.
Watch Tactical to Practical this Tuesday night at 9, 8 Central, only on the History Channel. And don't worry, Gilbert's not in it.
What?
What do you think I like about commuting with nature as much as I do? Being on the tractor as much time as I do, or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? Yeah, you're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to Animal Talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to Animal Talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Show. According to Abbas,
Immediately after Bush promised to speak with Sharon about the siege on Arafat, Bush said, quote, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then God instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. When God specifically whispers in someone's ear, I want you to go kill those people, and they go ahead and kill somebody, what do we do with those folks? We arrest them. They are jailed. In some instances, executed. We immediately identify them as crazy. You know, Ashcroft is going to say,
wait a second, George. God has been talking to me. God told me. Not you. God told me. These people are crazy.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
So they're coming to take me away, ha-ha.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Uncommon sense from the radical middle. The United States opposes EU efforts to test chemicals for health hazards. This from yesterday's Wall Street Journal. Amid festering trade and diplomatic tensions, the Bush administration is siding, no, today's paper, is siding with the U.S. chemical industry to wage an unusually aggressive campaign against European proposals that would require testing tens of thousands of chemicals for potential health and environmental hazards. Why would they do this? Because of the religion of conservatism that says, leave the market alone, leave the corporations alone, trust us, we're experts. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Bill in Chicago's on the line. Bill, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Bill.
I was wondering if this hiring practice in Colorado for the professors in colleges, is this kind of like affirmative action?
Yeah. You know, I've got another story in here, and I'm not sure where it is in the stack, so I can't just pull it out right. But it's about how there's a movement, you know, among universities right now to do away with affirmative action for, you know, and it's kind of an anti-George W. thing. You know, George W. Bush never would have gotten into Harvard or Yale if his father hadn't been an alumni or an alumnus and hadn't donated large amounts of money to these colleges.
Right.
And so there's this movement now kind of in response to the anti-affirmative action thing to say, okay, if we can't give affirmative action to people who have genuinely been discriminated against and harmed by our society and our culture, then we're not going to give it to rich white guys anymore either.
How do you prove you're a conservative, anyway?
Well, it's interesting. We're developing a 12-step recovery program for recovering conservatives that will be rolling out sometime in the next week or two. And the core notion is the belief that government is terrible and corporations are perfect. We had a guy from the Ayn Rand Institute on the other day who ended, you know, he had to get his last word, God bless the corporations, you know, as loudly as he could before he was, he thought I was going to cut him off or something. I thought it was funny.
Yeah, but if I wanted a job, how do I say I'm a conservative and prove it?
What, I beg your pardon?
If I wanted a job as a teacher, how would I prove I'm a conservative?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a good question. I don't know. There's probably some kind of vetting, Bill. Bill, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. If you've got something you want to share with us, give us a call. We're going to take a break for the news here. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, helping you win the water cooler wars. We'll be back.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Animal
Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities, like from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies, Raven Simone. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out, so he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Dolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk, Saturdays and Sundays on the IE America Radio Network.
Who says Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why not put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Three people are confirmed dead already, and that death toll could still climb higher, with dozens more injured following what police are saying was a suicide bombing outside an Israeli army base earlier today. Ambulance workers on the scene say at least a dozen more people are critically wounded. The blast happened at the crowded entrance to the large base near Tel Aviv, just as many soldiers were leaving for the day. Army Reserve and National Guard soldiers called up for duty in Iraq will be staying there a bit longer than they thought. Their tours have been extended to a total of 1 year on the ground in Iraq and the surrounding region. That's 6 months longer than most soldiers thought they'd be serving. The troops and their advocates say that move could undermine morale in the Gulf. President Bush, of course, is asking for about $90 billion from Congress to rebuild Iraq and Afghanistan. And Senator Chuck Hagel says while he probably will get that money, lawmakers are first wanting answers to some tough questions. On the early show today, the Nebraska Republican said the Bush administration simply didn't plan the after-action well enough.
Yes, they did miscalculate it. I think they did a miserable job of planning for a post-Saddam Iraq. The fact is, this is difficult. This is complicated. This is dangerous. This is uncertain.
Iraq gets the spotlight today in a meeting of the Senate Armed Services Committee. General Richard Myers says the U.S. remains, quote, a nation at war, and the stakes could not be higher. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff told the committee, the post-war transformation of Iraq requires hard work, patience, and commitment, and he called our troops there true American heroes. Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz also said post-war transformation is a big job that will require patience, time, and determination. Wolfowitz said the costs are large, but he argued the United States can't afford to leave this job unfinished. Wolfowitz said walking away from Iraq now would send the wrong message to terrorists. The Senate Armed Services Committee today will also discuss if the United States military is stretched too thin.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Because I look like doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
Indiana Governor Frank O'Bannon remains on life support today after suffering what doctors say was a massive stroke yesterday. Doctors who operated on O'Bannon say they found blood in both hemispheres of his brain. They say the next day or two are critical for survival, and for now, O'Bannon is in a drug-induced coma. Reports the pedophile priest scandal in Boston has been settled are apparently premature. The Boston Herald and ABC News both said the Archdiocese of Boston and lawyers for the 500 alleged victims had settled for $85 million. An Archdiocese spokesman, though, says there is no deal.
And we're playing all your favorites, but right now I have a pair of free tickets to tonight's big concert for the third caller. Oh, let's go to the phone lines. They are heating up, and let's see. Hello.
Hello.
Is this Ms. Shannon Johnson?
Yes, it is.
Oh, you sound very excited.
I am.
Well, Ms. Johnson, I have good news.
I'm the third caller.
No.
I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
North Korea is reiterating its position it sees no reason to keep negotiating with the United States, and Pyongyang's ambassador to Russia has reportedly said his nation has no choice but to, quote, further expand our nuclear deterrent forces. Correspondent Priscilla Huff has more.
North Korea is marking its 55th anniversary as a communist country with a massive show of military might. Kim Jong-il may even unveil his latest threat, a new multi-stage ballistic missile with a range of up to 4,000 kilometers. And some fear that Pyongyang may use the occasion for a missile test or worse to underscore its position that it will pursue nuclear weapons. And that's why in Washington, the former American diplomat who had been the lead negotiator with Pyongyang is urging the Bush administration to talk directly with North Korea. For now, the U.S. State Department says the six-party talks are in the early stages and it's not time to junk the process. Priscilla Huff, Washington.
And I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Name some things that are different. Apples, oranges, men, women, football, soccer. How about tune-ups? If you think they're all the same, think again. And when I come back, I'll tell you all about it.
Okay, so you want one good reason to get LoJack installed in your car. Well, unfortunately, I can't give you that. But I can give you three. LoJack has a 90% recovery success rate. LoJack has helped recover over 100,000 vehicles worldwide. And LoJack is the only stolen vehicle recovery system used by the police. So if you still want just one good reason to get LoJack, that last one should do quite nicely. To find a dealer near you, visit LoJack.com and keep it close.
Why does your tune-up cost $500, but your neighbor's only $100? Apples and oranges. Although symptoms in two vehicles are similar, actual problems can vary dramatically. Here's what I mean. Your neighbor's V8 engine is running on 7 cylinders due to a bad plug wire. Tune-up cost, $100. Your V8 engine's also running on 7 cylinders, but it's due to a burned valve. Tune-up cost, 5 times $100. My advice, investigate the diagnosis before you relegate your wallet. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. The U.S. opposes EU efforts to test chemicals for health hazards. We just started this just before the break. This threatens the U.S. the United States' traditional role as the world's standard setter for manufacturing and safety. Here's the historically, I mean, for decades, perhaps for a century, I don't know, for a long, certainly back to Roosevelt's era, or the end of it, maybe Truman's era, certainly, you know, establishing itself during Eisenhower, the United States defined standards of safety for much of the world. And now we are reversing that. Why? Because of this religion of conservatism. The U.S. State and Commerce Departments, this reading from today's Wall Street Journal, the U.S. State and Commerce Departments, the Environmental Protection Agency, and the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative, isn't this an unholy alliance? The EPA and the U.S. Trade Representative, the group that's supposed to regulate and protect us, and the group that is supposed to work with corporations who have as their first priority profits rather than the health of we the people. The U.S. State and Commerce Departments, the Environmental Protection Agency, and the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative have sided with companies including Dow Chemical, Roman Haas, and Lyondell Chemical Company, and trade groups in opposing the European Union's chemical testing initiative. That has angered environmentalists who say that lax U.S. policy allowed dangerous chemicals such as PCBs and DDT, to be used for decades before they were found to be potentially cancer-causing. Nobody was doing the testing. Nobody was like, well, you can sell this stuff. Here's the kicker. By the way, there are some 80,000 chemicals being manufactured around the world. When the EPA was first created, fewer than 1,000 were mandated to be investigated for their toxicity. And the last time I looked at this, the actual stats are in my book on equal protection. I think it's fewer than 50. I'd have to go back and look. It's certainly fewer than 100 have actually been determined to be safe. So we've got, and the vast majority of them have not been tested at all. But what would it cost? The EU Commission, the executive arm of the European Union, this from the Wall Street Journal, estimates the direct cost of screening these mostly untested chemicals to be between 1.4 and 7 billion euros. That's 1.6 and $7.8 billion over 11 years. So worst case scenario, it's going to cost $8 billion to test all these chemicals. That's the expense. Now, what is the benefit? But commissioners say the benefits, mostly from expected lower health care costs, that is, people aren't going to get sick and die because of the chemicals being pumped into our atmosphere and our water and our food. The benefits are estimated at 18 to 54 billion euros, more or less, let's see, 1.4 becomes 1.6, so that would be roughly 19 to 55 billion dollars. So it costs us $1.5 to $8 billion. We get back $19 to $60 billion or $55 billion. And this is a classic example of the problem with the con article of faith that the market will solve everything. And that is that The prime directive of a corporation, and I should say right up front, I'm all in favor of corporations. I've started a bunch of them. I've done well with them. I'm very pleased with the fact that corporations exist. I'm not pleased with the fact that they have acquired access to human rights under the Constitution. This was not the intent of the founders, and it's not right. It's a whole other rant. But in any case, here is the conservative argument that if you let corporations do whatever they want, however they want, eventually everything will be wonderful because it's a utopian, this is the utopian world, a free market, unregulated and unrestrained. We shouldn't have unnecessary government regulations, to quote Dan Quayle. And the reality is that because a corporation has as its first obligation to generate profit for its shareholders and its owners, which is an okay thing in my mind, because it has that as long as it's appropriately restrained, as long as because it has that as its first obligation, they will always seek to internalize profits and externalize costs. In other words, make as much profit as possible, and if there are expenses that can be passed off to somebody else, like the cost of people dying from using your product or having it in the air and water, that's fine as long as we don't have to pay for it. And that's why on the one hand, you've got the conservatives saying no government, essentially, or only, you know, government should only be limited to protecting the borders and building roads. And on the other hand, you have the extreme, the communist notion, the USSR acted out communism, of no private industry. The means of production are owned by the people. And in a community larger than 150 people, neither will work. Neither will work. Both will ultimately fail. So what's the solution? The solution is what Madison and Hamilton and Adams and, I mean, with all of the battles that they had, and Jefferson and Monroe and Washington and Franklin, that these guys worked out. And that has been fine-tuned for 200 years since then, largely by democratic administrations, which is maintain a balance between the interests of those who are primarily seeking their own wealth and profit, which can be a great engine for growth for a nation if it's properly controlled, That is to say, if they're not allowed to harm other people in the process or harm society. So on the one hand, allowing, authorizing, corporations are authorized by the states, authorizing corporate behavior. And on the other hand, saying, and there are specific limits to what you can do. We have to have, there has to be this balance. This hard right agenda is destroying America. We are seeing our country being ripped apart by these people with this social experiment and this geopolitical experiment. Pax Americana. Change in the Clean Air Act. This is from the Burlington Free Press a couple days ago. The Clean Air Act change was just one of the environmental protections gutted by the administration last month while lawmakers were on their summer breaks. Jim Jeffords says, as far as the environment is concerned, August was the most brutal month in my memory. This included the easing of restrictions on developing land contaminated with PCBs, the EPA's announcement that it doesn't believe it has the power to regulate global warming and greenhouse gases. Here's another, just a short clip from Jim Jeffords, his thoughts on what's really going on with this administration and how this is not just the environment, it's also jobs, it's all intertwined. This is the United States Senator from Vermont.
His polls and famous advisors tell him to talk about compassion and job growth and how he is helping Main Street. But that is all it is, it's his talk. In reality, he adopts hard right proposals that favor those who need help least and neglect those who need help the most. In reality, we are now in the longest period of continued job loss since the Great Depression. Since the beginning of the Bush administration, 2.7 million private sector jobs have been lost, and the number of unemployed Americans has increased by over 45%.
Mind-boggling. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937, and Gary in Colorado Springs is on the line. Gary, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Gary. What's up?
Well, a few minutes ago, you were using the term neocon and conservative, mm-hmm. and you made the statement that you wanted to drop using the neo part of neocon because you were asserting that those individuals are just conservative anyway, why not make them fess up to it?
And not only that, I think that they're going to be the whipping boys for the failures of the conservatives. It's sort of like what the conservatives tried to do to liberals, and so the liberals started calling themselves progressives. You know, people reinvent words.
Yes, I understand.
Yeah. So anyhow, your point.
My point is that the neocons are truly a unique subset with what you and a lot of commentators like to refer to as conservatives. The fact of the matter is they're not conservatives. They're not physically conservative. They're not militarily conservative. They're not socially conservative. I might argue about that one. But they certainly don't fit the classical definition of a conservative. And I think by continuing to illustrate the fact that the Republican Party has been taken over by these neocons, I think the true conservatives that existed in the party for years will be inclined to rise up against the neocons and work against them. I think more and more Republicans in this country are starting to realize that they've been taken down a rosy path by these neocons and the right-wing religious cohorts. And as they begin to realize that, I think there's a chance that they can reduce the power of those individuals and perhaps throw them out of the party altogether. So I encourage you to continue to using the term neocon to represent this batch of scoundrels and their right-wing religious partners.
Yeah, the problem that I see, Gary, is that you're absolutely right. The neocons are a separate group. They're these, you know, 60s intellectual leftovers who have converted from the left to the right. But their main shtick is international policy. Their main thing is that if we don't project force across the world, then they're going to come and get us. And in fact, I've got a little clip from William Crystal here I'll play in just a second. There we go. Here, let's just listen to William Crystal, one of the neocon founders here.
Best force, and I don't think they do.
Hang on just a second. We'll start it at the beginning.
Wishfulness, I think, to Clinton's worldview. He hoped these multilateral agreements and bilateral agreements could replace the exertion of U.S. force, and I don't think they do.
Yeah, in other words, we shouldn't trust multilateral agreements. We shouldn't trust treaties. We've got to fall back on force.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole conservative lie is really much, much larger than that. That's the main point that I'm making.
I agree with you. The conservative line is much larger than that, and I think the conservative line deserves a good deal of thumping right now. But the greatest threat to society, the greatest threat to freedom, the greatest threat to our position in the world, and our rights as civilians, as citizens of the U.S., don't come from traditional conservatives. It comes from the neocons and their religious right cohorts. And by the way,
I would broadly agree, except that I think that the word conservative has been hijacked by these people, too. The only classic conservatives that I know of are Voinovich and Snow. And all the folks on the right are calling them liberals. Gary, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK-YES. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
You want your son to be a doctor, so you've got to get him to his SAT course on time. You probably want to whip up something quick for dinner. Think fast. Think eggs. Like a microwave egg casserole with ham and cheese. It's delicious, easy to make, and ready in minutes. So your son makes it to his course, gets into med school, and you get free medical care for the rest of your life. All thanks to the incredible edible egg. Think fast. Think eggs. For other quick dinner ideas, visit AEB.org, the American Egg Board.
As your boss, I've noticed you've been dragging at work lately. So, take tomorrow off. Here, take the company tickets to the game. Box seats okay? And take my car.
In the guy's perfect world, you'd have it all. Well, now you can. Because Domino's introduces Philly Cheesesteak Pizza. Guys like Philly Cheesesteak, guys like Domino's Pizza. Get your medium Philly Cheesesteak Pizza for $9.99, and you can get any second medium for just $5 more. Get the door. It's new Domino's Philly Cheesesteak Pizza. Limited time offer. Prices and terms may vary. You must ask for this offer when ordering.
Walmart, the world's largest and richest corporation, spends about $500 million a year on poll-tested ads trying to convey an "aw shucks, we're just friendly folks from Arkansas" image. But like the wolf in Little Red Riding Hood, Walmart regularly bares its teeth and shows a nasty, devouring reality behind this carefully crafted mask. For example, the Beast of Bentonville, as it's known among its own employees, pays poverty-level wages, holds most employees to part-time work, denies health care benefits to most of its workers, is rabidly anti-union, and is a notorious and often convicted discriminator against its women workers. It's also the world's largest exploiter of sweatshop labor, especially in China. Not to worry, though, for the corporate honchos are now rushing to cope with its spreading reputation as a labor abuser. Are they raising wages, providing good benefits, enhancing the bargaining power of workers? Get real. As the company's chief spokesman put it, we can't change who we are. We can't change what makes Walmart Walmart. Instead, they're dumping a few million more bucks into a new PR effort to try putting some fresh gloss on its tarnished work record. Its ad agency has released 3 radio and TV commercials portraying happy-go-lucky workers giving scripted testimonials about what an absolutely terrific place Walmart is for workers. More Walmart ads are planned to try buffing up other image blotches the company has, including the fact that neighborhoods all across the country are in rebellion against the arrogant intrusion of Walmart megastores. Thousands of suppliers are grumbling about its bullying tactics, and local businesses are rising in opposition to its monopolistic practices. This is Jim Hightower saying, Walmart can run all the ads it wants to cover up its abuses, but it's like putting earrings on a hog. They just can't hide the ugliness.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
She's a rich girl, she don't try to hide it. Diamonds on the soles of her shoes. He's a poor boy, empty as a pocket. Empty as a pocket with nothing to lose.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, bringing you Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Hear this from Andre Bazin in 1950. He wrote an essay called The Myth of Stalin in the Soviet Cinema, pointing out that historically, no country had ever tried to portray a living leader in a fictional context. That would be the height of propaganda. But in the late 1940s, they actually did this. They had a couple of movies that were about Stalin, when Stalin was still in power. And he says, one of the original aspects of Soviet cinema is its daring in depicting contemporary historical personages, even living figures. Well, it's happened again. We just saw this 9/11 movie, DC 9/11. On the Showtime channel, which I think is owned in large part by the Kuwaiti government. I want to just share one quick clip with you of a true conservative, and then we've got a couple of calls. I'm going to pick one up. But here, this is Dwight D. Eisenhower in his farewell address to the United States when he left office.
As we peer into society's future, we, you and I, and our government must avoid the impulse to live only for today, plundering for our own ease and convenience the precious resources of tomorrow. We cannot mortgage the material assets of our grandchildren without risking the loss also of their political and spiritual heritage. We want democracy to survive for all generations to come, not to become the insolvent phantom of tomorrow.
1-800-TALK, yes, 1-800-825-5937. And John in Santa Fe is on the line. John, that was a true conservative. What do you think?
Yes. Hi. I just appreciated that quote there from Eisenhower.
So he's a brilliant man in many regards.
Right. Yeah, I have a feeling that I want to side with the gentleman who just called in that I think if you start using the word conservative in a broad way like that, then it starts to fuzz up the issue, because there's plenty of people out there who would probably regard themselves as conservatives. I used to sort of align myself with Russell Kirk, and I probably don't now. I don't think in labels myself. But soon as I think you start talking labels, you start obfuscating the issue. Because what we're really talking about is, to me, somehow a last-ditch stand of an old way of orienting to the world, that we're moving from a tribalism, from nationalism, because I'm seeing it emerging everywhere. You know, as we saw, for instance, the peace marchers before the war started, how people who had never marched before were marching, you know, one side by side to protest any possible war. And it's because I think there's a new wave of understanding that wants to emerge. And the old is making a last-ditch stand against that, going for nationalism.
Yeah. Don't you think that though that's a cycle that's continuously happening? I mean, the same thing.
Yes, and we're at the stage of a large cycle, what I would maybe call decadence, even in terms of, you know, decadent Rome. The last stages where they started to just pit themselves between them and the barbarians, overextending themselves, and really what emerged was the Essenes,
Yeah, it could be, John. I think though that we've got a long way to go before we reach the point of the collapse of Rome. One of the big differences between us and Rome is that Rome had kings, Caesars, and we have this archetype of democracy. And we don't think that our king is divinely inspired, and our living kings are not on our coins. And
I think that's superficial. I think from a Campbell point of view. When a nation loses its myth, or biblical point of view, loses its vision, it goes into decadence. It doesn't matter what the form of that vision is.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And Oswald Spengler wrote about this in the 20s. And we'll talk about it after we come back from the break. John, hold on the line there. We got to take a break here. This is Tom Hartman on IE. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
A trek through Alaskan oil lands provided a first-hand look, but almost cost this author his life. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. At the age of 21, Chad Kister set out on what you might consider a crazy mission. He hiked alone across northernmost Alaska to document the impact of the oil industry on the Prudhoe Bay region and to see the disputed Arctic National Wildlife Refuge with his own eyes. Kister describes his dangerous, low-budget expedition in a new book called Arctic Quest, and he has nothing good to say about oil development around Prudhoe Bay, which he explored on foot.
They've turned what was one of the biggest wilderness areas in the world into one of the biggest toxic wastelands in the world. It's surrounded by hundreds of toxic waste pits. There's a huge array of thousands of miles of pipelines and roads, housing facilities for thousands of people. There's stacks of barrels that have been strewn throughout the tundra for scores of miles from Prudhoe Bay.
Kister spent 3 months hiking and rafting in backcountry Alaska. He survived a near drowning and bouts of hypothermia and illness, and he had to scrounge for edible plants and berries when his food ran out. But he says it was worth it to see the coastal plain, a land rich with animal and plant life. Kister strongly opposes oil development in the refuge.
There's a very small amount of oil, only a six-month supply of oil for the United States, and it would take 10 years for that oil to ever come to market. And if we would just increase the corporate average fuel economy of the United States automobile fleet, we would save more oil than would ever come from the Arctic Refuge.
That's Chad Kister, author of Arctic Quest. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, your animalogical super information highway about pets. Every Saturday and Sunday, we take your calls, help you with your pets, give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like, from Eight is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel. Animal Talk, Saturday noon to 2, Sunday 7 to 9 p.m. on the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
We have grown, although our love feel still special. Let's take a chance and fly away somewhere alone.
It's been too long since we took the time. No one's to blame. My no time flies so quickly.
Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Nervous Duck in our chat room. You can get to the chat room by going to TomHartmanShow.com and clicking the chat room link, and then you get to the Trade Forum and CompuServe, click the chat button, and boom, you're in. He says, religious fanaticism is dangerous, even more so when somebody like that is in power and corrupts a country worse than before. Braintrub says, before we invaded Iraq, I intended to support our troops rally. They had speakers who actually said, God bless our anointed leader, George W. Bush. A few preachers said this on the podium. It was a recurring theme. Finally, one of my friends screamed back at the preacher, Bush was not appointed by God. The police promptly dragged her off. She was charged with inciting a riot. Remarkable. Amazing stuff. John in Santa Fe, we were talking just before we entered. You wanted to finish your point about Joseph Campbell.
Yes, well, that there are these cycles. In fact, this one of your callers just earlier did say there's a historian who sort of named these steps in this cycle. And, you know, after abundance, he said, came... selfishness, and then a complacency, and then an apathy, and then dependency.
Yeah, see,
I think we're sort of in that place.
Yeah, John, that's not actually the cycle. That's right-wing propaganda. The actual cycle is that, if you want to look at cycles of civilizations, is the people discover a resource, whether it's oil or wood or slaves or some other land or whatever. They discover something that can be used as a resource. And then they grow their civilization based on that resource until the resource runs out. Same thing with barley in Samaria. And when they've wiped out their agricultural lands, or they've used up the wood, as Rome did when they had to build their ships and invade Europe, or and as Greece did when they completely denuded most of the islands of Greece, and you know Cicero wrote about this and at length. When they run out of their resource, their civilization collapses. And then they go into a time of terrible trial and tribulation, a time of terror, and then they emerge out of that into a time of egalitarian balance. And you see, and then out of the egalitarian balance, they may sustain that for years or hundreds of years or thousands of years, and then eventually they forget and they discover a new resource, or they start to use a resource that they've always had all along and say, well, we can exploit this, and the cycle begins over again. And when Europeans first came into contact with Native Americans, there were different tribes across America in each one of those four stages in the cycle. And that's the cycle. And if you want to look at cycles of history and culture that operate in, you know, multi-thousand-year realms. But Oswald Spengler was the one who really suggested this thing. I've got it here. It's in my book, Unequal Protection. And Spengler, in his book, Decline of the West, which was first published in German in 1918, he talked about the hardening or the classical phase of a culture. He wrote, in all high cultures, I should clarify, he thought this was a good thing. This was in 1926. He was prophesying that the Roaring Twenties would end. He said, in all high cultures, therefore, there is a peasantry, which is breedstock in a broad sense, and thus to a certain extent nature herself, and a society, which is assertively and emphatically in form. It is a set of states, of classes or estates, and no doubt artificial and transitory, but the history of these classes and estates is world history at its highest potential. It is only in relation to that, only in relation to it, that the peasant is seen historyless. And, you know, his point being that as a society, and he went on to say that as a society moves into its classical phase, it starts creating caricatures of itself. In other words, rather than being truly patriotic, they have the symbols of patriotism. Rather than truly being compassionate, they have the symbols of compassion. Rather than truly being, you know, whatever, it becomes a cartoon of itself. And this means that a society has rigidified and stratified, and at that point, then the rich can grab more and the poor get crushed more, and that eventually this leads to either a very stable phase, as feudalism was stable in Europe for hundreds of years, or it leads to revolution, one or the other. And I'd say, I agree with Spengler that we're moving into that right now. So, anyhow, that's my thoughts on that. John, thanks for the call. I appreciate you sharing that with us. We've got a couple other calls here. William in New York City. William, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi there, Tom. I love your show. I just recently got into it.
Thank you.
I wanted to comment on something you said earlier about conservatives being introduced into higher education. It seems to me that a lot of the people who are backing this are the same guys who fought tooth and nail against affirmative action.
Right, but they want affirmative action for conservatives.
I just think that's so hypocritical in light of their, you know, in light of their views towards, you know, getting women into the workforce and getting blacks and other minorities into the workforce. Here, well, they're turning around and saying, "Well, let's get as many of our guys in there."
Yeah, William, these are the people who create a piece of legislation that allows polluting companies to increase air pollution, and they call it the Clear Skies Initiative. Hypocrisy is not something with which they are uncomfortable.
So true, so true.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this is particularly resonant with me as a student because, the academic world is one of the few places where you can go to actually hear, you know, a legitimate search for truth, whereas, you know, almost every other, you know, forum for expression is, you know, literally polluted by conservative propaganda. So it scares me to think that, you know, that the last bastion of intelligent thought could be taken over.
Yeah, it concerns me too. Thank you, William, for calling and for sharing that. This whole thing, the death throes in some ways, I think, of the conservative movement. And on the other hand, the incredible power that they've been able to acquire, both the conservatives, the social conservatives, this whole merging of conservatives, and what they call themselves, the fiscal conservatives. Obviously, they're not. These are folks who have taken over and perverted the term. Now, they, you know, as you heard Eisenhower saying, we must not mortgage our children's future for today's pleasures, for today's needs. And this is the true conservative perspective, historic conservative perspective. But I defy you to find, you know, out of 300 or 400 elected officials in Washington D.C. who call themselves, well, out of maybe 200 who call themselves conservatives, you won't find three who agree with Eisenhower anymore. Everybody is marching to this drum of what some call the neocons, and I think the whole conservative thing has been taken over. We had Tim in Gold Beach, Oregon, and he wanted to argue with me. Tim, I would love to hear you rebut my positions, and he dropped off because he'd been on hold, I think, for about 10 minutes, and I apologize for that. We had a couple of callers, and time moves on, but if you want to call back, I would love to have a conversation with you. This is not one of those kind of shows like the right-wing shows where they filter out people who disagree with the host. In fact, I love to hear from people who disagree with me. Christian Vachier, the last sheep farmer in his small commune north of Aix-en-Provence in France, is wondering whether his pastoral life in the Luberon Mountains is about to end. Pardon my mangling the French here. This from the today's New York Times, Western farmers fear third world challenges to subsidies. On the other hand, halfway across the world, Dean Argotzinger, who raises corn and soybeans on 2,000 acres in Denison, Iowa, has the same worries. So we've got this one guy who is a farmer in France on 36 acres of pasture. He basically just sells his things locally within his own community, and yet he's subsidized by the French government because they think it's a good thing that there be local farmers and that these kinds of high-quality foods be available. And then we've got this Mr. Argotzinger, who receives $336,000 from the federal government every 4 years and produces grain and uses chemical fertilizers and produces grain for the rest of the world. And the upshot of this, as I think I shared with you a couple of days ago, there was another article in the New York Times, U.S. corn subsidies said to damage Mexico. The more than $10 billion that American taxpayers give corn farmers, just corn farmers every year, in agricultural subsidies, has helped destroy the livelihoods of millions of small Mexican farmers, according to a report to be released on Wednesday. There's a direct link between government agricultural policies in the United States and rural misery in Mexico, is the title of a report called Dumping Without Borders, How U.S. Agricultural Policies Are Destroying the Livelihoods of Mexican Corn Farmers. And I mentioned this because tomorrow, it's either this afternoon or tomorrow, the WTO meeting is being kicked off in Cancun. And this is going to be one of the big battles, is the fact that in the West we are subsidizing massively, I mean billions and billions and billions of dollars a year. Bush just signed an agricultural subsidy bill that kicked out, as I recall, another $40 billion into agriculture. And as a result, what happens is that in small countries, well, for example, back to the New York Times today, the world's wealthiest nations give more than $300 billion of subsidies to their farmers every year, more than the entire gross national product of all of sub-Saharan Africa. And the ambassador from South Africa says, we would give up foreign aid if the farm subsidies were eliminated. The subsidies give the rich nation farmers the upper hand in all markets, and we can't even compete in our own markets. In other words, what happens is a local farmer in South Africa grows something, and they can buy it cheaper from an American farmer than from a local South African farmer, because we are subsidizing the American farmer to keep the prices down so that they can, quote, compete in the world market. This is producing a disaster around the world. And why is this happening? And why is this one of the centerpieces of George W. Bush's international policies? Well, it turns out, in 1995, the top 10% of American farmers received 55% of government subsidies. By 2002, it was up to 65%. The top 10% of American farmers. In other words, basically, these are very, very large corporations. Now, how do these corporations use the money that they make? Political contributions, this is from the New York Times today, the political contributions from agribusiness jumped from $37 million in 1992 to $53 million last year, with the Republicans' share rising from 56% to 72%. Those commercial companies were not disappointed. When President Bush signed into law last year a new farm policy that increases permanent subsidies by $40 billion a year. So we, you know, speaking of hypocrisy, this brings us back to the whole question of why do we have trade? Why do we trade? And the simple answer to that, and we've gotten into this in some more detail in the past, but I'd like to stay more with today's news, has been that we trade to get things that we can't get locally, not necessarily just to wipe out people on the other side, but we trade to try to, you know, if you can't get French wine, then you want to trade with France. So if you're going to get their wine, you've got to have something to offer them in exchange. And if you don't have something to offer them in exchange, you end up in their debt, and then you've got a problem. That's the whole problem that we have with China right now, this balance of payments thing and trade surplus. But I wanted to just wrap up the original point, and then move on. And that is that a balance between laws and mob rule. Laws on the one hand being a rigid constitution that never changes, which we don't have. We have a dynamic constitution. It has within it the ability to change itself. It's called the amendment process. So the balance on the one hand between laws and the extreme of that, laws that can't change, and on the other hand, mob rule, pure democracy, the balance in the middle of a constitutionally limited, representative democratic republic. That's what we have, and that's the balance. And this is a balance that the cons want to overthrow. It's why they tried to overthrow the presidency of Bill Clinton. It's why they're trying to redistrict Texas when the law requires that redistricting be done every 10 years, and on the years ending with zeros, 2000, 2010, 2020, and it was done in 2000. But they want to do it again, because right now they've got control, and so they're gonna wipe out many of the Democratic districts, so they'll have more Republicans in the United States Congress. This is Tom DeLay, the famous exterminator from Texas, literally a bug killer. That's how he made a living before he went to Congress. This is Tom DeLay's big program. We see the overthrow of democracy in California coming in with money, saying, "Hey, you know, we're not." This is anti-democratic in the small D sense and in the large D sense. And then the other balance is the balance between the commons and the people on the one hand, and free enterprise on the other. The commons is the stuff that we all share, the air that we breathe, the water that we drink, the food that we eat, the safety of the food that we eat. And one of the concepts that our founders had, and they wrote it into the Constitution, was that the goal, they don't use the word commons, but it's so explicit, it's right there in the preamble, in fact, that one of the missions of government is to provide for the common good. So the air that we breathe is something that we all own together. And because we all own it together, we empower ourselves through our representative government to protect it. And if somebody wants to come along, some small group like a chemical company or a power plant or the oil industry or the coal industry, representing a small number of people in a narrow interest, and they want to foul up that air that we all have to breathe, we have the right to say to them, you can't do that. And then if they say to us, well, do you want electricity or not? Then we can reasonably say to them, well, we'd like electricity and we would like clean air. And they can say, okay, you can have electricity for 7 cents a kilowatt hour with dirty air, or you can have electricity for 20 cents a kilowatt hour with clean air. Which do you want? And we get to make a choice. These things can be worked out. Or we can say, hey, you know, we would like to actually take some of our tax dollars, as Jimmy Carter initiated, and subsidize the development of forms of energy that don't produce air pollution. And there are breakthroughs in those areas, from fuel cells to wind and solar, geothermal. There's a whole bunch of them. And we can say, we would like to do this. But where it gets corrupted is when you get this conservative notion that the corporations can do no wrong, that the free market will always correct itself. This is a false religion. And when they pursue that, you end up with the corporations taking over the state, and that's the dictionary definition of fascism. Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
You know, I used to wonder why our real estate agent only showed us this condo in the daytime.
No, did you?
Okay, people, it's 9 o'clock. Let's get ready to party!
I don't wonder anymore!
Yeah, mystery solved.
Want to find the right real estate agent for you? At LendingTree.com, you choose from up to 4 agents certified by LendingTree and get up to a $2,000 gift card. Call 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE or visit LendingTree.com. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions may apply. See website for details.
Boy, I remember the good old days.
Yeah, when was that?
2003, of course, when interest rates were at historic lows and we knew the economy was turning around. What an historic opportunity. We really jumped on it. How'd you do?
Well,
We needed to expand our manufacturing and warehousing, so we called General Steel Corporation and ordered buildings engineered for our area and to meet our needs. And with the stucco and rock products provided by the General, our buildings look great.
How will you look back at this historic opportunity? Small business owners know that now is the best time to build that new warehouse, manufacturing, or retail space. Whether you need a 60 by 200 foot building for under $50,000 or a 100 by 175 for under $98,000, call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need to expand your business, you need the General. If your church or school needs to build quickly and save money, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Tia Carrera is on the front
in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years on them.
Well,
yeah.
Stop.
A few more years on them.
No. I'm talking about now.
Like the tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
What I think, you couldn't possibly be any dumber. You go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Show.
We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, BartCop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man for people who have more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to go on.
Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
We got a president so bad, gotta be the worst we ever had. Got the job 'cause of his dad, now we're all in danger. Come around, up to no good. Broke the old treaties 'cause he could. Struts all around like a hood. Got us in a world of trouble. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman and the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us. Paul Krugman has a column in today's New York Times. He talks about how if Bush had simply admitted how much the war would cost, you know, the question everybody's asking is, why did Bush wait until last week to tell us how much the war was going to cost? I mean, this isn't rocket science. You basically know how much, you know, how much as soon as they figured out it was going to take more than a week to be there, they 6 hours later, they've got enough economists over there in the White House, and they're not economists, actually. I think they've fired all the economists, but they've got enough bookkeepers over there that they could have figured out immediately what this is going to cost. Why didn't they tell us? Well, Krugman says, if Mr. Bush had admitted from the start that the post-war occupation might cost this much, he might never have gotten his last tax cut. He talks about this as the great bait and switch. Bush, all take and no give as usual. Yet in his speech on Sunday, he was once again up to his usual tricks. Once again, he made a rhetorical link between the Iraq War and 9/11. He declared this is, and you know, it's this. We have a president who rules by deception. It is so tragic. It is so sad. When Dwight Eisenhower left office, his last words to the nation were a prayer. Let me share those with you because I think it's time that we begin praying again for this nation.
May we be ever unswerving in devotion to principle, confident but humble with power, diligent in pursuit of the nation's great goals. To all the peoples of the world, I once more give expression to America's prayerful and continuing aspiration. We pray that peoples of all faiths, all races, all nations may have their great human needs satisfied, that those now denied opportunity shall come to enjoy it to the full, that all who yearn for freedom may experience its spiritual blessings. Those who have freedom will understand and also its heavy responsibility. That all who are insensitive to the needs of others will learn charity, and that the scourges of poverty, disease, and ignorance will be made disappear from the earth.
Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Thanks for being with us these 2 hours. Oh, I thought I heard the bumper music there underneath. I guess not. Oh, I did. There it is. Yeah. Thanks for being with us these 2 hours. Those stations that have another hour, stick around. We'll be right back.
Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Tom Roberts. Air Force One has landed in Florida today, but only after it had to be waved off from its first attempt to land due to security concerns. The White House says the lead vehicle in the president's motorcade confused officials in the airport's tower. Three people, including the bomber, are dead and dozens more injured following a suicide bombing outside an Israeli army base. At least a dozen more are reportedly critically wounded. Senators are grilling military brass members of the Defense Department over post-war Iraq. Nebraska Republican Chuck Hagel said the Bush administration did a miserable job of post-war planning. Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz said Iraq is a big job requiring patience, time, and determination. The U.S. Army has extended the tours of thousands of National Guard and Army Reserve forces to a year in Iraq. Laura Iyama reports.
The Washington Post reports intelligence agencies accurately predicted that U.S. forces would encounter more problems after the Iraq war than in overthrowing Saddam Hussein. In the view of America's agencies, if Iraqis saw the U.S. and the West trying to keep them dependent, then Iraqis probably would turn to obstruction, resistance, and armed opposition. As for terrorism, last summer the CIA warned chaos after the war would turn Iraq into a laboratory for terrorists. Laura Iyama, Washington.
The governor of Indiana remains in critical condition following surgery yesterday at a Chicago hospital to treat a cerebral hemorrhage. Jerry Snook has the latest.
A spokesman at Northwestern Memorial Hospital says Indiana Governor Frank O'Bannon remains in a drug-induced coma and is on a ventilator. Doctors say the next few days will be critical to the governor's recovery. O'Bannon was found unconscious and unresponsive in a Chicago hotel room yesterday morning before he was sent to deliver welcoming remarks to the U.S. Midwest Japan conference at the Palmer House Hilton Hotel. Meanwhile, Lieutenant Governor Joe Kernan has assumed temporary acting governor duties while top state officials watch and wait for word of O'Bannon's condition. I'm Jerry Snook.
More in a moment.
Hey, Larry, baby, you want to go for a ride?
Why, Vince, I didn't know you cared.
I don't, but I'm looking for a baby.
But, Vince, we're crash dummies.
Well, your head's about the size of a baby. What are you doing? Taking it off!
Stop!
I'm using your head in a rear-facing infancy.
Why?
To show how babies up front are in airbag danger.
You know I get sick when I ride backwards and without a body.
Up in front, kids won't know what hit them when the airbag blows.
Then why do people put their kids up front, Vince?
I don't know. Maybe it makes them feel better to see them sitting by their side. Although, if my baby looked like you, he'd ride in the trunk.
And where are we going, Vince?
You know that brick wall with the big bullseye?
I can see it vaguely in the back of my mind.
Well, in 2 seconds, that's exactly where it's going to be. Cow, Larry, you're embedded in the seat.
Tire iron.
I can't understand you. I'll go get a tire iron.
Thank you.
You could learn a lot from a dummy. Buckle your kids in the back seat.
A message from the Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Reports that the pedophile priest scandal has been settled in Boston may be a bit premature. The Boston Herald and ABC News both say the Archdiocese of Boston and lawyers for the alleged victims have settled their differences for $85 million, but a spokesman for the church in Boston says there is no settlement deal. Workers at Disneyland in California getting high marks for their handling of accidents at the theme park following the death of one person last week when a roller coaster jumped the tracks. The LA Times today reports state safety officials have nothing but praise in the wake of Friday's accident. More after this.
My husband asks if I'm ready for the boat show, and I'm thinking with my cold, I am totally off the hook. So I tell him, I'm too wiped out for 10 acres of boats, dear. Then he hands me DayQuil, the DayQuil I bought him last week when he had a cold. Here you go, he says. This cleared up my coughing and aching, so I had the energy to go antiquing with you. It'll help you get back your energy for the boat show, mate.
DayQuil. The daytime non-drowsy, stuffy head, sore throat, coughing, aching, fever help get back your energy. Medicine. From the makers of NyQuil.
A contemporary and more colorful $20 bill is about to make its debut. Don Haley, External Relations Chief for the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, says new colors and symbols will adorn Andrew Jackson's bill.
The most noticeable difference about the new 20 is the addition of background colors. The $20 note has peach, green, and blue background colors. We've also added symbols of freedom, which are a large blue eagle to the left of the portrait and a smaller metallic green eagle and shield to the right of the portrait.
Haley says the new and improved $20 bill will make its debut October 9th. She also says the design is less likely to be counterfeited. A bar in Norfolk, Virginia has come up with quite a gimmick to attract more female customers. The owners of Crocodile Rocks are holding a contest in which the winner gets breast implants or any other plastic surgery procedure free of charge. The package is worth up to $5,000. I'm Tom Roberts, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Your car coughing, sputtering, riding rough? Think your service center has one magic machine that checks everything? Oh, no. One size doesn't fit all. When I come back, I'll give you the scope. The scoop.
Okay, so you want one good reason to get LoJack installed in your car. Well, unfortunately, I can't give you that. But I can give you three. LoJack has a 90% recovery success rate. LoJack has helped recover over 100,000 vehicles worldwide. And LoJack is the only stolen vehicle recovery system used by the police. So if you still want just one good reason to get LoJack, that last one should do quite nicely. To find a dealer near you, visit LoJack.com. And keep it close.
Just like in a doctor's office, different diagnostic tools are used for different symptoms in service centers. A scope performs an EKG on your car's electrical system and checks engine functions as it runs, just like a patient on a treadmill. A scanner, on the other hand, talks with car's onboard computers and sensors, like getting a patient history. But if your car has new noises, hard steering, bumpy ride, or vibrating brakes, you don't need a machine test. You need a doctor, a qualified, experienced technician. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back, broadcasting live coast to coast on the IE America Radio Network, streaming down from outer space on channel 145 of the Sirius satellite radio system, and broadcasting live on three different web stations on live365.com, ieamericaradio.com, and radiopower.org. This is Tom Hartman, award-winning reporter for BBC Television's Newsnight and The Observer of London. Greg Ballast's extraordinary reports have been front-page news in Europe, yet blocked out of America's mainstream media. Although, Greg, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. It seems you're getting more and more media coverage these days.
Yeah, Tom. Well, for those who don't know, I do also have a book out called The Best Democracy
money can buy, which is now, this week it's been now 6 months on the New York Times.
Greg, you're real faint. Can you either talk louder or I think Char's got you potted up as far as it'll go.
Okay. Let me get this. Hang on one sec.
Okay. Greg is also the author of a book called The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. This was the book that originally broke the scandal in Florida story about Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush stealing the vote that Michael Moore then reported on in his book.
Anyway.
And his marvelous bit of investigative reporting. Greg, welcome back.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, sorry. It must have sounded like I was coming from another planet there. Yeah, the Best Democracy Money Can Buy, the book is now 6 months on the Times bestseller list, and that's because these are reports that you can't read in your newspapers or you can't watch on mainstream television in America, what I do for BBC and for the papers of Europe. I have to do investigative reporting from exile. But apparently, despite what the Fox News chieftains say, people really do want to hear the information.
Yeah, the word is getting out, and you're doing a great job of it. And there's many people who really appreciate it. This is a big week, you know, 9/11 and all this sort of thing. And one of the things that you've pointed out, and others as well, I think over the years, is that Karl Rove only allows any kind of bad news to leak out on Fridays and holidays when everybody's distracted and not paying a lot of attention to the news.
Yeah, well, one of the interesting things is that we have the distinction now in America that a special distinction for the Bush family. Father and son have both figured out how to get 9 million people unemployed in America. The day that they were going to announce that unemployment had now risen to its highest levels since the Bush 1 administration, was they released that information on July 3rd so that July 4th either no one would read the paper or it would be just filled with pictures of fireworks.
Right. And none of the newspapers that I read compared Bush 2 to Bush 1. They just said it was the highest level since the Great Depression.
Yeah, I mean, you get the idea that somehow Al Gore created this unemployment.
Yeah. Well, that's their new talking point. Louise got in the email yesterday from one of these conservative groups that sends out talking points to right-wing talk show hosts that the new talking point is George Bush inherited this from Bill Clinton. It's all Bill Clinton's fault.
Yeah, it was really rough for Bush. He inherited a $4 trillion surplus and has turned it into a deficit. He inherited, by the way, a war on Osama bin Laden, and which he immediately put to rest. Robert Oakley, who was advisor to the Bushes, said our big problem with this was coming into the new administration. He said our big problem with the Clinton administration was Clinton's fixation on getting Osama bin Laden.
Hmm.
You know, so Bush took care of that. He yanked, for those who don't know, and if you watch U.S. TV, you probably won't know, his administration actually yanked the visas from the FBI investigative team in Yemen that was looking into the al-Qaeda attack on the USS Cole. He closed up the investigative group, which within the intelligence community, hunting down the financial connections between Saudi Arabia and the terrorist fronts. So, you know, he inherited some very difficult, you know, he inherited basically peace, prosperity, and an anti-terrorism program, and immediately was able to, in short order, reverse it all.
Yeah. The information that you were just citing about his shutting down the investigations of al-Qaeda, have you written a piece on that, or is there a URL that we can point our listeners to?
Yeah, actually, it's pretty easy to find my stuff. Obviously,
GregPalace.com.
Go to GregPalace.com, 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 and on the left side of the homepage, you'll listen or watch Greg's report, and that'll give you the actual BBC television broadcast in which I broke this news. And, of course, if you read the book, the title chapter, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, has the story of how the Bush administration spiked the investigation of al-Qaeda. Now, I'm always careful when I bring this up because they'll say, oh, a conspiracy nut. I don't have any information. I really don't. That Bush knew about the attack in advance, or, you know, God forbid, had any hand in it. Nothing like that. We're talking about massive intelligence failures brought about by a prejudice of this current administration against investigating Saudi Arabia, and that's where, and
or anything,
which
yeah,
is the money, and the money and the hijackers came from Saudi Arabia. If you can't follow the money, you can't do an investigation. I mean, it's like rule number one.
Well, let's talk about that. There's the Carlyle Group, which is an employer of George Bush Sr., which has made a pile of money for the Bush family, and the Bush family has made a pile of money for the Carlyle Group, and they were meeting with one of the Saudi princes. Let's see, what was it? Wasn't it Shafiq bin Laden in Washington D.C. on 9/11? George Bush Sr.
Yeah, I mean, don't forget that George Bush Jr., our current president, was also on the Carlyle payroll. Not many people realize that he was handed the job of one of their subsidiary operations that they own called Cater Air. Now, I'm sure that he got the job because of his extraordinary business acumen, though despite his great business abilities, his Carlyle subsidiary went bust.
Hmm.
So this is a guy, don't forget, this is a guy who's against affirmative action. You know, leave no millionaire behind. Our president said no one should get their position except through merit. On the other hand, even though he blew away Carlyle's money, they don't seem to be very happy. Like you said, the net result seems to be working their way. But also, George W. earned millions in the oil business, but he never struck oil. I mean, he had all these companies, including one, for example, Harkin Oil, and the business was saved. Harkin Oil was saved by a Sheikh Baksh. Now Baksh is a Saudi billionaire. Why he suddenly gave money to Harkin Oil, which was during the last oil bust, is very unclear. Maybe he wanted to have a little influence with the company operated by the president's son. Mm-hmm. And Baksh is one of these people who's being looked at as possibly funding terrorist fronts by European agencies. Now, that's only because, by the way, the Saudis are giving money to al-Qaeda to some extent because they just want to pay off Osama. It's kind of a protection racket that Osama's running. You know, pay me or I blow up your yachts.
Right.
Not necessarily that they agree with him. It's that they're just paying him to get rid of him. Unfortunately, when you give terrorists money, they do things that aren't very nice.
We are speaking today, it's 15 minutes after the hour, we are speaking today with Greg Palast, in my opinion, the best investigative reporter of the 21st century, Greg, and of the last part of the 20th century. Greg is an absolutely brilliant investigative reporter who has done extraordinary work. You can read it in his book, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. You can find more information about it at GregPalast, PALAST.com. And Greg, you're
making me blush, Tom.
But it's true, and our my listeners know this as well. I've had a couple of people call and ask me that I ask specific questions of you, and I got a couple of emails here too. And I know you can only be here for about another 5 or 10 minutes. Is that right?
Right. Well, I can stay just a little bit more.
Okay, great. You wrote a brilliant article about power deregulation in the August blackout. The power problem was caused by a dim bulb in the White House. Can you give us a two-minute snapshot of that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we get this baloney in our press. Oh, there was some type of, like, accident. As it turns out, a tree limb fell on a power line in Ohio. Well, that's not the problem. That's not why. You know, tree limbs fall all the time. Lightning strikes plants, et cetera. Those out there who work in power plants, who actually keep the lights on, know this. Well, the issue is not what happened to start a blackout. The issue is why did it spread? And it spread because, as I say, you have to trace it back to the dim bulb in the White House, an issue called deregulation. When President Bush, on number one, George I, left office, just before he left office, he signed the bill to deregulate the power industry. What people don't understand is that when you deregulate the power industry, you not only pull the lid off prices, which has made your bills soar up, but you remove the rules. You effectively remove the rules requiring that the government budgets the utilities to maintain their systems. So, for example, the company that spread the damage into New York, Niagara Mohawk, is a company. That was just bought out by British Power Pirates. It's actually owned by the British Niagara Mohawk Power Corporation. And the first thing they did when the Brits moved in, the first thing they did was to fire 800 workers and pocket $90 million in savings. Well, the majority of those workers were in service and maintenance. So, golly gee, when the power surge hit, there was a mess. The relays didn't work, everything, you know, you say the system wasn't maintained. Because they didn't stop the power surge, they blew out all of New York City.
Yeah. Surprise, surprise.
Now, that happens again because of George Bush the first and his deregulation, which was pushed by George Bush the second in Texas. Now, of course, the second was neatly rewarded for allowing these power pirates to run amok. After Bush won, signed deregulation, his son received $16 million in donations from the power industry. So it's a good little gimmick that the Bush family runs. I call it the Bush cycle.
Yeah.
Daddy does favors, and the son collects the money.
Yeah, and it seems to be repeating over and over and over again. 1-800-TALK-YES is there.
Right.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And you see that cycle happening all over the place. For example, Jeb Bush, we do know, you know, it's no secret that the number one lifetime campaign giver to George W. Bush was Enron Corporation.
Yeah.
And its executives. Now,
we got about 15 seconds here,
yeah,
Greg, before we got to take a break.
What they do, they got the water systems. Jeb Bush offered them the water systems of Florida. And, you know, that's a nice little trade-off.
Oh, yeah. Plan to privatize the Everglades, wasn't
that's
it?
That's right.
Yeah, amazing. We're speaking with Greg Palast, author of The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, Greg Palast, PALAST.com. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. 1-800-TALK-YES, 825-5937. If you have a question for Greg, we'll be back right after this break. Stay tuned.
This is Mike Malloy. Another year has passed since the attacks against us on September 11th, 2001. Another year and still the refusal of the Bush administration to investigate the massacre of 3,000 people on U.S. soil. Another year of killing authorized by the Bush administration of civilians in two countries who had absolutely nothing to do with the terrorism conducted against us. Another year marking the absolute failure of leadership of the Bush administration. How much longer until we, the citizens of this country, say enough? I'm Mike Malloy.
Henry David Thoreau said that there are 1,000 hacking at the branches of evil to one who is striking at the root. ReclaimDemocracy.org is striking at the deepest root of today's problems, runaway corporate power. We focus on proactive structural change to restore citizen authority over corporations and return them to their legitimate role, doing business and nothing more. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org.
As your boss, I've noticed you've been dragging at work lately. So, take tomorrow off. Here, take the company tickets to the game. Box seats okay? And take my car.
In a guy's perfect world, you'd have it all. Well, now you can. Because Domino's introduces Philly Cheesesteak Pizza. Guys like Philly Cheesesteak, guys like Domino's Pizza. Get your medium Philly Cheesesteak Pizza for $9.99, and you can get any second medium for just $5 more. Get the door. It's new Domino's Philly Cheesesteak Pizza. Limited time offer. Prices and terms may vary. You must ask for this offer when ordering.
Thieves in High Places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Hey, fool me, can't get fooled again.
And with the nation's grace, one man is...
Talk radio for the rest of us. Welcome back. This is Tom Hartman of the IE America Radio Network. We're speaking with Greg Palast, the leading investigative reporter for the planet. Greg has done groundbreaking work for BBC, his book, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, a New York Times bestseller, and one of the finest pieces of documentary journalism that I have read in my 50-some-odd years on the planet. And, Greg, we've got a couple of calls here. Ruth in Florida has called 1-800-TALK-YES to ask you a question. Ruth, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Tom. Hey, Mr. Palast, it's really nice to talk to you. I read your stuff regularly. I pass you on to my friends. I'm really glad you're out there doing what you're doing.
Oh, boy, that's encouraging. Thank you.
Please, believe me, we pass your name around amongst us. We're really happy you're out there. But I have a question for you. The things you write about, there's plenty of documentation. I'm a housewife and an artist in Florida, but there's plenty of documentation out there, so even I can find out these facts. What I want to know is your opinion of why aren't the Democrats out there screaming this from the rooftops? They surely must have research staff to put together to know these things. Al Gore must know a lot more than he's saying. Bob Graham knows a lot more than he's saying, although he's out there intimidating it. Why aren't more of them out there screaming this from the rooftops?
Well, yeah,
good question, Ruth. Thanks.
There's a lot of them. I think the general rule is like asking why don't jellyfish stand up? Because they're invertebrates.
Oh, God, no.
You know, but on the other hand, I have to say, I mean, and not everyone is silent. I mean, you know, there is a, you know, I think that the Democrats have forgotten something called loyal opposition,
yeah,
which is you don't stand by and cheerlead or hide or hope that Bush will blow himself up, though he seems to be actually doing pretty well at that. Nevertheless, and there are people who are out there complaining. In fact, you did mention, for example, Senator Bob Graham, and I don't support, by the way, any particular candidates for office, but what's very interesting is he's running a presidential campaign on the fact that we're not releasing the real information about September 11th. He was the senator from Florida. He is a senator from Florida and was heading the September 11th Investigations Committee and claims that he was completely stymied by the White House. Now, he is kind of stuck because he signed all these confidentiality agreements, and therefore one of the reasons he's running is on the grounds that we ought to get more of the real story.
Yeah. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. We're talking with Greg Palast, GREGPALAST.com is the website, author of The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, and Jay in Virginia's on the line. Jay, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program with Greg Palast.
I listened to a fellow, I don't know if y'all were familiar with Jim Maher or not, a fellow that was talking about how
the CIA had had meetings with Osama bin Laden, and they used the name Tim Osman to kind of fool the public. And, of course, you know, George Bush has had a lot of social contact with Osama bin Laden, this kind of thing. And I just wondered, you know, since this is the case, is the reason he keeps hollering about wanting to get rid of Osama bin Laden is just to kind of fool the public?
Well, I mean, I don't know about any particular direct contact between Osama bin Laden and the Bush family. I do know that, obviously, there's the bin Laden family. Not, and by the way, just because your name is bin Laden doesn't mean that you're a terrorist. Osama has 52 brothers and sisters. What I'm concerned about is hampering our intelligence community because the Bush family has both a fear of embarrassment, and the other is to make sure that, hey, the you know, that not only some of these connections aren't uncovered, which are embarrassing, but we can't upset our wonderful relationship with our good friends, the Saudis. You know, so.
But Greg, on the other hand, you've got neocons like Wolfowitz saying that the Saudis are part of the dominoes that are going to fall if we can establish democracy in Iraq.
Well, this is, you know, Wolfowitz is in has his own fantasy island.
yeah.
He is not in charge of U.S. foreign policy. You know,
as much as he thinks he is.
The U.S. foreign policy, if anything, has been colonized by the Saudis. They have the oil. He who has the oil calls the tune in Bush
oil. There you go. We're talking with Greg Palast on the Tom Hartman program. Greg, we got about a two-minute break here, and then we'll come back. We've got a question for David from New Mexico, and then you can let us know if you can stick around.
All right.
1-800-TALK,
you,
yes?
You got it.
Okay. Thank you. Hang on, Greg. Hang on, David. We'll be right back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
Embarrassing disclosures for Ford Motor Company and the United Auto Workers in the form of a decision handed down by the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals yesterday. The case involves Stephen Himmel, who from 1977 to 1997 was Ford's man in charge of labor relations at its Sharonville, Ohio transmission plant. He was fired for objecting to an unwritten deal worked out between the UAW and Ford, whereby individual UAW officials have direct influence over the hiring of up to 10% of Ford's union workforce. Himmel sued over his firing, and a district court ruled for Ford, but the Sixth Circuit reversed the decision, citing existence of evidence that the unwritten deal may actually exist. Ford has never disputed it.
The American Federation of Labor and the Congress of Industrial Organizations merged in 1955 to form America's largest labor federation, the AFL-CIO, but new differences within the union umbrella group are threatening to split the organization apart. Leaders of the Service Employees International Union, along with the Carpenters, Laborers, Teamsters and the country's largest textile workers union, Unite, recently formed a group they call New Unity Partnership that hopes to turn around organized labor's long, steady decline in U.S. membership. The partnership's leaders say their new organization isn't ready to split from the AFL-CIO, but could in the future.
California has become the 17th state in the nation to outlaw companies from profiting off the deaths of employees. Hundreds of companies take out what are known as dead peasant insurance on their workers. These life insurance policies name the company as beneficiary. California's dead peasant insurance prohibition, signed into law over the weekend, allows current corporate life insurance policies on workers to remain in effect for now, but the practice will be banned completely come 2010.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tell me you love facts real straight. Don't make me over.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. We're speaking with Greg Palast, www.gregpalast.com. He's the author of the brilliant, groundbreaking New York Times best-selling book, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. And David in New Mexico is on the line with a question for Greg. Welcome, David.
Hi, Tom. Great to talk to you. Let me tell you, I think you're the most intelligent and informed talk show host I've ever listened to.
Hear, hear.
Well, thank you, David.
Greg, I've been reading your writings. It's just a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank
you. I just wanted to comment and get your response and Tom's response. I think so much of this comes back to kind of three axioms of human behavior and money that I don't think I have yet to find a conservative that would disagree with, and that is that money attracts money. You know, if you have a penny and double it, you get 2 pennies. If you have $1 million and double it, you get 2 million. So money attracts money, that money is power, and vice versa, and that power corrupts. And absolute power corrupts absolutely. I don't know who, you know, discovered these axioms, but they're like the law of gravity. You don't go jump off the roof because you don't believe in the law of gravity.
Well, I think that it's not so much a law as a fact. But, you know, we do have an antidote to this, which is called democracy.
Amen.
Activated.
Amen, brother.
I mean, remember that, look, I agree with you about money and power. And, you know, those who have the money have the power, and if they have the power, they can get some more money.
Right.
The thing is that...
And the more money they have, the more corrupt they become.
Well, and, you know, but the reason why we instituted this republic 200-some years ago is the idea that we should have something that countervails against that, which is raising your hand and getting your vote counted, which seems to be really in jeopardy now. What I'm concerned about with the flood of money and the fixing of the elections combined together, that we are moving away from elections to auctions. After all, in the last election, the guy with the most money has the office, and the guy with the most votes is, grew a beard and took off. So, you know, the changeover from elections to auctions is really my big concern. And we're looking now at a president who just held, he just signed a law for campaign finance reform saying that no person could give more than $2,000 to any election campaign and federal election campaign, and yet he held a barbecue for those who have given more than $50,000 each.
Well, raised more.
It's like a bank manager holding having a dinner party for bank robbers.
Yeah,
it's not a thing. It's this is how it's running.
Yeah, the scam that they run, Greg, is called bundling, where you get to be a pioneer, and you probably know this, where you get a certain number of $2,000 donors bundled together, and you put your number on their check, or you get them to put your number on their check, so you don't want to follow FEC rules.
You know, they say that that's a legal way around the law. I got to tell you something. My wife runs a credit union. I hope you're all members of credit unions, not banks. She runs a credit union, and there's a law that says you have to report cash transactions over 10 grand. You can't bundle your money. You can't have, 85 people each putting in $9,000 and get around the reporting laws. When you try to get around laws, that's called conspiracy and racketeering. Other people, if their last name ain't Bush, go to the pokey for that type of stuff. But now they are so raw that they flaunt it in your face. They make it legal by making it obvious.
Yeah. Greg, one last question here. I know you have to go, and I appreciate your hanging out with us this long. I'm just curious. You have broken so many incredible stories and been at the leading edge of so many things. What do you mind sharing with us what you're working on right now, or telling us what you think the next big aha is going to be?
Well, I'm still always worried that that one of the hidden fronts in our war in Iraq is Venezuela. And so look out for more trouble in Venezuela fomented by our government, our government. We didn't elect them, but they're ours. The other is I have a document that I'm checking into right now. Well, I know it's authentic from the State Department. It's the post-conflict plan for the economy of Iraq. And it's written well before we were told there was going to be a conflict. And
really?
Let's put it this way. I'm not one of these cynical people who believes that we went into Iraq for the oil. But as this document makes clear, we sure as heck ain't leaving without it.
So I'll be right
about that.
Yeah, so the folks who say there was no plan for post-war Iraq are wrong. There was a plan, and the plan was plunder and pillage.
Yeah, it's quite detailed, so I'll be writing about that, I think, for Rolling Stone magazine and on my website. So stay tuned. Go to the website, gregpalace.com. And, of course, if you want the background on all this, there is the book. I'm almost sorry that you have to get a book. Well, you can get it out of the library. You don't want to spring for it. I just feel like it's a shame because if you were living in other countries, you'd be getting my reports in your regular daily paper on your television. Here you kind of have to kind of read it in your basement before Ashcroft writes down your name.
Well, or if people can read it on the internet. It's remarkable how many are connected. Although it's remarkable how many still aren't too.
Yes.
The poor in this country, for example.
Well, Tom, you are a treasure. You really are the crack in the electronic Berlin Wall, and I really appreciate the opportunity to break through here.
Well, thank you, Greg. It's an honor to have you on the program, and I thank you very much for sharing your this time from your afternoon with us.
Okay.
Have a great one.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye now. 1-800-TALK, yes, if you have further thoughts or comments. One of the things that Greg was talking about, a campaign financing, in today's New York Times, justices hear vigorous attacks on new campaign finance law. Here's the issue that you need to think about when you hear this, because there's going to be a lot of discussion about this in the evening news tonight and probably throughout this week, because the Supreme Court has pulled itself into special session just to talk about this one issue of whether or not the McCain-Feingold law is constitutional. The McCain-Feingold law was the one, of course, that banned soft money from corporations or unions. It's interesting, in all the discussions, they always say money from corporations or unions, but it's not the unions who are suing to get this law overturned, it's the corporations. I mean, it's just that's where it's at. The amount of money that corporations used to give prior to this law versus the amount that the unions, it was just an absolute joke. It's so incredibly lopsided. The corporations, of course, being where the money is. A corporation is formed for one single purpose, which is to create money. A union is formed for a very different purpose, and so it's no surprise that the unions don't have, they're not boiling over in money the way that a corporation would be. But in any case, the Supreme Court for the first time since the 1970s, since 74, I think it was, when they convened to decide whether there was some issue with regard to Watergate. I think it was whether or not the Nixon administration had the right to fire the special prosecutor, but I could be wrong. But anyhow, it was one of the issues around the Watergate trial. For the first time since the 70s, when the Supreme Court pulled into special session to determine that, they've opened a special session here. They heard pleadings yesterday about what should be the situation with regard to this law, whether this law should survive. And Rehnquist, who had been supporting who actually wrote the majority opinion in a Michigan law, this was back 10 years ago or so, as I recall, around 1990, that said that the corporations in Michigan, that the Michigan law that restricted corporate donations to campaigns and to politicians was a legal and legitimate law. Rehnquist appears to have changed his tune on this, and I think this is really interesting because back in 87 in the Boston versus Bilotti case, Rehnquist also wrote the dissent in which he pointed out that, in his opinion, it was a mistake back in 1886 when the court ruled that corporations are persons and have free speech rights. And it seems that he has changed his tune. I don't know why. It would be fascinating to find out what his thinking is on this, and perhaps a little concerning. He said before the pleadings here yesterday, he said, "I voted in the majority," speaking of the Michigan law. He said, "I voted in the majority, but it seemed to me since then that the whole purpose of the First Amendment is to allow people who perhaps don't have much in the way of public opinion to try to change public opinion." Well, yes, that's true, Justice Rehnquist, if we're speaking of people. But a corporation is not a people. Just like a government is not a person, a corporation is not a person, a church is not a person, a labor union is not a person, a civic club is not a person. All of these groups have been denied personhood over the years, with the single exception of corporations. And this is a major problem. But here's the bottom line. When they talk about free speech, what they're really talking about is cash. And that was what was decided in the Boston versus Bilotti case. Is cash equal to speech? And this, in my opinion, was one of the most horrible mistakes that the Rehnquist Court has made so far. Cash is not speech. Speech is something different from cash. Speech is an expression. Cash is the ability to get that expression out, and they need to be decoupled and separated. As long as we keep thinking that cash equals free speech, we're doomed. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Judy in Illinois is on the line. Judy, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
I have two thoughts. Number one, I'm not as concerned about the campaign money being spent as I am about the voting machines being fixed.
Yeah.
Because if they take away our vote, everything else is a mute subject. And do you think that this is a backdoor into declaring corporations people?
Well, they declared corporations persons in 1886. I actually wrote a book about this called Unequal Protection, and the court actually didn't declare it, but the recorder of the court claimed that they did, and the court has behaved ever since then as if they did. But the voting machine issue is a real interesting one. I've done three articles on this for Common Dreams and Alternet, and if you go to tomhartman.com and click on the articles about democracy, you can find them. And there are other people. Greg has written about it. Lynn Landis, Rebecca Mercury, who was a guest on this program a couple of weeks ago, has done some great research on this. There was a meeting last weekend in Philadelphia about this. I think that the cat is out of the bag. Frankly, my personal opinion is that there's a very high probability that the vote in the state of Georgia in the 2002 election cycle was actually rigged, whether it was done by an insider or I frankly don't think that the corporations did it. I think it is probably whether it was done by an insider or a hacker or somebody in one of the parties who figured out how to hack the machines is an open question.
Well, we've had two elections now that have been stolen, 2000
yeah.
and 2002. I think it's time to call in the UN and have Jimmy Carter and someone else set up the election, the next elections, like a third world country, because there's too much fraud. And
I think they were supposed to do that in Florida, Judy, in 2002.
Pardon?
In 2002, they were supposed to do that. We were actually supposed to have election observers in the state of Florida, the Federal
right.
Election Commission, because of everything that happened in 2000. There were supposed to be federal observers in Florida in 2002, and there weren't.
Yes, I called Feinstein's office and said that she should demand that for her state because I feel they're going to steal California.
Yeah, well, Dianne Feinstein is an extraordinary woman and a great politician, but you live in Illinois and she's in California.
Right.
She's going to pay a lot closer to attention to her constituents.
Right.
I would suggest that you be contacting your Illinois elected officials, Republican or Democrat.
But I'm concerned about the grab for the big electoral states, and I'm sure Illinois is next.
Sure. Yeah, or already,
you know what I'm
saying? Already gone. I mean,
I think
every
American should be concerned about this.
Yes, and this is why it's so important, and I'm so pleased that this is starting to get traction now, this issue of the voting machines. It's so important that you contact not just your elected officials, but also call your county election, the county officials who run the elections on behalf of the Secretary of State, in your state in Illinois. I did it here in Vermont. I was amazed. I called the county person here in the town where I live in Vermont, and she didn't know a thing about this. And so I shared the information with her, and she was like, I can't even believe that. It's, you know, and then so I pointed her to a couple of websites, and she was like, whoa, you know, this is incredible. That's the bad news. The good news is that, you know, here in Vermont, other than in one major city, we're not going to have voting machines, apparently. We're still using paper. Anyhow, Judy, thanks for sharing that with us. I got an email from a friend of mine, Samuel Mueller, who lives in Stettsteinach, Germany. And I said, Samuel, do you guys have voting machines in Germany? And he just sent me back an email this morning saying, no, we mark an X next to the name around it. You know, there's a circle. You put an X in it on a piece of paper. A country of, 54 million people, I think Germany has. All of Europe does not use voting machines. They use paper. Why can't we? It's not like somebody has to take office the next morning. I mean, we have the election in November and people take office in January. There's plenty of time to count paper ballots. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937, and Robert in Washington, D.C. is on the line. Robert, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air.
Thank you. I wanted to call you about another set of machines that could be just as much of a nightmare as the voting machines, and it was in today's Washington Post about the CAP system dealing with airline security. And
the
way
you X-ray the human machines?
Well, I'm basically, from what I understand, it is going to enable them to not only invade people's privacy, but when you go through the check-through line, you're either going to get a green light or a yellow light or a red light, and if you get a yellow light or a red light, they're going to haul you away, in some form or another, either to be interrogated or, in the case of a red light, to be arrested.
Oh, this is the database profile where they check your name against the database.
Exactly, and they've already learned that because of lack of public scrutiny and so on, that there are all kinds of people's names on the lists right now that shouldn't be there. And it's basically just another big step toward a police state in this country.
Well, the interesting thing that I think will balance that, right? I fly a lot. I accumulated something like 7 million miles with Delta, and I've got a couple million with United right now because I used to do a lot of international relief work, and also for every one of my books, they put you on book tour and whatnot. And so I'm in the top of the frequent flyer programs, and I get all these emails and things from the airlines, and the airlines are scared to death of this. And they are, strongly trying to work it out so it doesn't become the scenario that you're talking about. Because every person who gets pulled out of line is a person who the airline's not going to make any more money off of.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for what it's worth, that little bit of free enterprise may be a balance. But, this is an issue that I think we all need to be concerned with. Robert, thanks for the call. I appreciate your calling in. 1-800-TALK-YES. If you've got a final call or note, we'll have a couple of minutes here at the top of the hour. This is Tom Hartman here in the Democracy Zone. Talk radio for the rest of us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Mom, see you later.
Jason? Who else is going to the concert with you?
Anna and Kyle.
So you'll be home
at 11.
Good. Make sure to call me if anything comes up, okay?
You know I never forget.
I know you don't. Now, about that music.
Yeah, isn't it awesome?
Well,
Let your kids be who they are, but know what they're doing. Talk, know, ask. Parents, the anti-drug. For more information, call 1-800-788-2800. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
When we bought this house, I really loved all the open space nearby.
Me too.
Too bad our real estate agent never mentioned what they had planned for that space.
Four! Yeah, too bad.
Want to find the right real estate agent for you? At LendingTree.com, you choose from up to four agents certified by LendingTree and get up to a $2,000 gift card. Call 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE or visit LendingTree.com. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions may apply. See website for details.
Boy, I can't believe I didn't do it. I really missed the boat. Interest rates were at historic lows. I knew the economy was turning around. I could have called General Steel and saved a ton of money on the building I needed, and I'd be ready for the new economy. Yep, I really blew it.
Will this be you? Perhaps a year from now. Let General Steel Corporation show you how to take advantage of this unique moment in history. A steel building from the General will save you time and money compared to conventional construction. And you can hold your building delivery for up to 1 year with a small deposit. Small business owners know that now is the best time to build and prepare for the new economy. Whether you need a 60 by 200 foot building for under $15,000 or 100 by 175 for under $98,000, call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need manufacturing or warehouse space, you need the General. If your church or school needs to expand quickly and save money, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL. This moment in history won't last forever. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
The Tom Hartman Show.
Adam, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What's up?
I just find it that you guys are really cynical to believe that Cheney or Bush or any of these guys would risk troops' lives to make money. You must think that these guys are really evil people.
If you go back to 1998 and read the Project for a New American Century, what they were saying basically, if we're going to continue to consume 25% of the planet's oil, then our security is at risk if we can't secure our oil supplies. So we have to secure the oil supplies by seizing control of the Middle East.
Is this what you say they said, or is this what they had stated in a policy and an
This is what they said.
Why is this on CNN every night?
It was on CNN a year ago. It was on CNN in 1998. They wrote a letter to Bill Clinton demanding that he attack Iraq, and that letter has been a public document ever since. And it was signed by all of these guys who are now in the administration.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. But you must try, try and try, try and try.
And I think we can get it. I really do. I really believe that there is a powerful and positive future awaiting America. We still hold that ideal. We still hold that archetype of freedom. forget about the right-wing paranoid nonsense about no democracies ever survived more than 200 years. Well, yeah, the Greek democracy crashed because they were invaded by Alexander the Great, who at that time had amassed the greatest military force that the world had ever seen, had nothing to do with democracy. In fact, they had successfully repelled a number of invasions, and they had overthrown two internal revolts that had tried to, that had successfully actually destroyed their democracy. The revolt of the 400, as I recall, and the revolt of the 30, or the revolution they were called, Socrates apparently secretly was supporting, and that's why he was asked to, that's why he chose to commit suicide after he was condemned to death for corrupting the youth, because he was fomenting this anti-democratic revolution. The democracy came back. It was the jury of his peers, as it were. It was the polis, as I recall. It was 499 or 500 or 501, right around 500 people who were serving their duty as participants in democracy back then. So I think that there's a tremendous future. And the fact, I mean, the word is getting, today's New York Times. George Bush, he wants $87 billion, and they point out the Marshall Plan, the entire reconstruction of Europe in today's dollars. I mean, back then it was $11 billion, or $13 billion rather, but in today's dollars that would be $100 billion to rebuild all of Europe. We've already spent $77 billion in Iraq, and he wants to spend another $87 billion. Do the math on it. It's more than the Marshall Plan. It's 20% of non-military discretionary spending. It's 63% of discretionary spending on education. 1.5 times the federal discretionary budget for spending on education we're going to spend in Iraq. And yet we have schools that are falling apart. We can't afford to bring teachers in and make class sizes reasonable. I just wrote a book about this, by the way, called The Edison Gene, about the state of education. Anyway, I think that we can change these things, and we will. And come November 4th, and long before that, too, as word gets out and people wake up. This is Tom Hartman on the ID America Radio Network. Thanks for joining us. Our program produced by Louise and Louise Hartman and Joe McPherson, and engineered by Shar Jones. Stay tuned. Tune in tomorrow. Same time, same place. We'll see you then.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities like Ted Nugent.
Everybody's got to learn to support hunting, fishing, and trapping, because that's where the dollars come from to save habitat.
You know, every time he gets done talking, I feel like I should say amen.
But, amen, because I live the truth. That's what my book, God, Guns, and Rock and Roll, it's on the New York Times bestseller list. It sounds like I'm bragging because I am.
I love the book, Ted.
Thank you. It's like we're at a damn campfire, isn't it?
Animal Talk, Saturdays and Sundays on the IE America Radio Network.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with Animal?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on,
there.
This is a commercial for a major radio network. We should do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.